This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3687 for Tuesday, the 20th of September 2022. Today's show is entitled Hacker Public Radio 2021-2022 New Year's Show Part 6. It is hosted by Hanky Magoo and is about 186 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is, the HPR community comes together to chat.
Are you a ham radio enthusiast, by the way?
Yeah, I have not got the experience. I think my granddad did it, though. Someone in my family did that.
As yes. We have a clever and cunning plan to convert everybody to a ham radio operator. It's my secret plan for the whole 20s.
I did hear a good show the other day about someone talking about their license. And, you know, with boats and things, you need a license to get to be on the water, don't you? So if it's easy, I might get into that later in life.
Yeah. Well, as you'll notice, all my conversations will drift towards ham radio. I will say, if you get your foundation license, really with the level of, from your technical level, based on what you're submitting shows on HBR, you would have no problem just getting the technical level. And that gives you the ability to use purchased radios. So €50 or £50, sorry, £50 Chinese made handheld. And then you can operate it on water on the inland riverways in the UK.
Oh, thank you. There's a guy over the street from me, and he's got like a big, like two poles, basically, one on either side of his house, and a big wire stretched over the top. He's clearly into it. And I mentioned to him about messing with it a few years ago, and he was just the horror on his face. He was like, don't mess with it. Like, just please don't interfere.
Run. Well, why was that? Just so that you...
I don't know. I think I was coming across very unprofessionally. It's fair for him to point it out. It was, good advice.
So the foundation exam is £27. If you can't afford that, I'll pay it for you.
Thank you. No, I could do it. I might look at the content, like how long it would take and what crossover there is.
They're doing all their exams online at the moment. So for the foundation exam, you don't need a dual setup. So you just go in and they have you have two screens. It's like a WebEx conference. And then you get to this website where it's a quiz, multiple choice, and you click through them. And basically, if you read the foundation book, I put a link into the webpage. The foundation book is it's maybe 50 pages, and it's mostly welcome to the hobby, and there's very, very little that you need to do in order to get your license, and then you at least have a call, ham radio call sign. Everybody should get that, because then you're at least able to use repeaters, and in the case of any emergency or anything, you can legally communicate as well. You have the radio in your hand, and during the course of the emergency, you're all bets are off, and you can help with communications and stuff. I'm looking at you as well, Tony.
Why?
It's a great thing to do.
I've got so many hobbies,
and that's the beauty of ham radio. It's compatible with all of them.
Yeah, I've just taken a look at that webpage. I've just pinned it so I can have a read of it later.
For sure, in an emergency or in any, just to be fluent and to not get in the way, to be able to use that network, I do see that as a useful skill.
Although there are people trained specifically for within the amateur radio service, they have people who are trained up. So if any of them turn up, as soon as they turn up, you step down and away you go.
I'm back.
Hi, I'm...
Right, I'm going to disappear for a couple of minutes. I've got to go and turn me bread in the oven.
Oh, very good. 40 minutes and this thing is done.
Yeah, I'll be back just for a few minutes before I have to go and take it out of the oven again.
And we can see if we can beat our previous record of 19 hours for the longest after show.
Was it 19 hours? When was that? Was that when I was kept it going?
It was a few years ago. I also
that, was that the one
weekend.
I kept going? It was, wasn't it?
Probably, yeah, probably.
Has your, know,
has the conversation with talk of amateur radio.
Has your son gone to bed now?
No, they're both staying up. I was surprised to hear my daughter was on as well.
Yeah, she was.
I'm not sure if that's the first female-sounding voice like that I've heard on here. Is there,
no.
Have you got any hosts? Oh, no, there's, although I don't know exactly, what's her name, Sigflup?
Yeah, I think that's who it was on last night, wasn't it? American woman, yeah?
Oh, was she? I missed her.
Oh, I would have liked to have a chat. I don't even know if I ever spoke to her in person, to be honest. Well, other, you know, email, but not in real life. That's a pity.
Yeah, I think it was her anyway. Yeah, S, whatever, yeah, whatever it's called.
What is the flup? Is that a signal, like a kernel signal? Signal flup?
I don't know. You'd have to ask her, I guess.
I might just Google in the... I'm sorry, search in my terminal.
I don't think there's a flup signal. There's probably some kind of joke or reference in there. There's a hub.
Yeah. That's... Grab a coffee, be back in a bit. Feel free to continue to talk about amateur radio while I'm gone.
What I've noticed now is that... obviously, all of us in Europe now, I think. I think obviously Clacky at the minute, because you're back in Sweden, and then the other guy must be English as well.
Clacky, you're just back visiting, are you? Or are you you're heading back to Hong Kong, are you?
I'm heading back, so I've been here for 2 weeks until Wednesday next week, and I'm heading back to Hong Kong.
Okay, very good.
So he's in your time zone currently, but not for that much longer.
Yeah. So I've been here for 3 weeks, and then when I come back to Hong Kong, I'm going to be 3 weeks in isolation hotel.
Oh, you got the COVID thing, yeah? You got very strict with the... Oh, yeah.
Very strict, yeah. So I booked... To even get on the plane, you need to have the vaccines, the recent test, like the last 3 hours, and you need to have the hotel booked. And I had a booking for 2 weeks, and then they bumped Sweden to risk zone A, so I had to have 3, and I thought I couldn't fly here. But then actually when I talked to the hotel, they managed another week.
Actually, yeah, come to think of it, you're probably lucky that you can go to Sweden because at the moment, because that's like the one country in Europe and probably most of the world, to be honest, that didn't even do a lockdown.
Doesn't China claim only 5,000 deaths from COVID-19 from like SARS-CoV-2?
Yeah, they can claim that.
It is remarkably low, but like if you were really strict, maybe. They had a bad experience with SARS original, didn't they?
Yeah, and Hong Kong has doing really well because everyone was so prepped from SARS 1.0. So like the minute people heard that there was an epidemic going on, everyone masked up immediately and wouldn't have masks. And
yeah.
Everyone is already washing their hands all the time.
Wasn't SARS original like a 50% death rate or something?
No, it was terrible, but not that terrible. It was 10%, which is pretty bad already.
Yeah, that is bad.
So there were only like 8,000 people infected by SARS, and 800 of them died.
For Hong Kong or China?
In total.
SARS original.
China.
Gotcha.
And the lucky thing with COVID in 2003, that was that the virus was so aggressive and... the incubation was so short and you only transmitted it while you were having symptoms. So it kind of killed itself very quickly. Otherwise, it would be terrible.
Yeah.
Question is, how did COVID start?
Well, we're getting to terminology. Do we really want to go there? I mean, those viruses, the coronaviruses, like, I don't know, like just reference This Week in Virology. They do a good podcast about all viruses, and they got some old guard on there and more modern. They talk for hours about virology in general. And then, of course, when SARS-CoV-2 came along, I think the first comment I heard on there was, oh, we've got this outbreak in Wuhan province. We've got 19 cases. Do you think this will go anywhere? And they said, oh, it'd probably burn itself out like the last one. But then they just talked about mostly, like, they doubled their number of programs. So they've got all sorts of information, like proper virology information on there. But my concern is, like, obviously it's a weapons delivery system, and you can, with CRISPR or whatever, you can put other things in there. That's even if you need a bad actor, because, like, nature throws up viruses every... There's plague every few hundred years, and they kill, you know, they can kill... a significant portion of the population. It's just a matter of when, if you think in terms of other biological populations, and then it's about what's your response to a societal breakdown, you know.
So are you saying it came from the lab, or possibly?
I'm saying it doesn't matter. That disease has always been the biggest killer. Like, it's for years and years, like, it's worse than war. War always makes things a lot worse, but disease is the biggest killer, whether you, like, that's heart disease or cancer. I think for years when I was younger, it was dysentery was the biggest killer in the world, and you could solve that with a sugar and salt solution. And it has just showed you how messed up, like, however you want to term it, the sharing out is in the world, that it killed so many people. But, how do you, like, field hospitals and supply chains relating to, like, giving people water and food is really important. And you're just lucky in a country that's had political stability based on weaponry for, like, a century or so. That's not the norm in history. And hopefully, like, things will get better, but... It doesn't matter who made it or where it came from. It's what the people do with it, and don't underestimate the power of stupid, as they say. So, does it matter about...
The biggest killer is still malaria, isn't it?
Of transmissible diseases that aren't, like, diet-related or, you know, it might be. It's a scary one. And the numbers are mad on that for the number of bites. People can be bitten, like, 1,000 times a day, like 500 times a day or something. And, like, of the... females that have eaten, had another blood meal. Like, the numbers are crazy on all of that. I just looked at the population numbers for humans, and we're at 7, like the, I know it's an estimate, but 7.917 billion. Like, by the end of the year, it'll be 8 billion, like in about 6 months' time.
Yeah, we just basically take over the world as well, human beings in general. We wreck it with our pollution and our cars and our factories and all the rest of it.
Yeah, to get your head around what that means as a... Like, I know people struggle to... Because they kind of identify with being human, but they, as an individual, it's quite different from the impact of your population.
Well, yeah, that's true. In some ways, we contribute to plastic waste and all the things we do, but then that we're just one person out of billions that are also doing the same thing, basically.
Yeah, and it's fun to live like the... average, isn't it? So if you multiplied your actions by 8 billion, like, what should you do? And that's a fun thought experiment.
And let's take plastic waste as an example. It's, you're in the UK obviously as well, it's not just here, it's everywhere, but it's disgusting because it's absolutely everywhere. You buy a bit of food and you've got plastic waste on it, basically. That plastic could stick around for over 50 years potentially, and then when it breaks down, it's going to go into microplastics, which isn't good either, a lot of it. And a lot of it is because the company's doing it, it's cheap, and the governments don't actually, you need to look at alternatives seriously now. What can you do instead? Because they just don't do it, do they?
Right, and that's part of the human problem, is that it's going to take the inertia in the change in behaviour in a population, and what tools are at your disposal to send out information in a way that people can act on it and make a difference, you know?
Yeah.
The plastic situation in Hong Kong is absolutely this. When you go shopping, the first phrase you need to learn in Cantonese is no bag, because people try to give you bags all the time. No, I have a shopping bag. No, no, I don't want a bag around my bananas either. No, I don't need a bag around my cold goods. Just give me the stuff, I'll put it in my backpack.
Oh, that reminds me. A friend said that in India, and maybe Hong Kong is the same, that when they have rice, you don't just get like one big bag of rice, they put like a plastic bag around a very small amount of rice, and then you, yeah.
Oh no, Hong Kong is not like that at all. When you buy rice, you buy this big 5 kilo bag, and it's just the big bag.
Yeah, I imagine it's sack amounts, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've got sacks in our supermarket actually down the road. It's they're getting pretty big, the sacks.
You have these sort of vacuum bag. So you buy this 5 kilo bag, but it's more like a brick of rice. because it's been all the air has been sucked out and it's hyper compressed.
Which supermarket, I was going to say?
Lidl. Lidl have got big. They've got to be bigger than five. They might be tens. They're not 25s. I've bought things in 25s before from, like, I'd get it from a Whole Food shop and I'd bring it home on a push chair. Yeah, on the tray of a push chair. I'd push it, that one, 7 miles, and have a sack underneath and a sack in where the child would go, like a double up push chair, and I'd push that between towns. And you could get, like, 25 kilos of soya beans for about £12 then, and a sack of wheat for, like, a tenner.
Yeah, Lidl can be okay. They do have the possibly, or I mean, I've seen the compostable bags in Lidl as well, the green ones, like Co-op do, the cooperative. Although with them, they've totally got rid of all their plastic bags now, I believe, which is fine, except if you've got some really heavy items, because then they break, of course, but with the exception of that.
Now, Lidl's got a lot of bags and there's a lot of plastic. They do freezer bags. Even those Hessian sacks are lined with a plastic and they spoil it by sticking a big Lidl logo on it. Like, it was a cool looking bag. I'd use those sack bags all the time. They get littered about the place. But for the, you know, they plaster Happy Shopper on it or something. And I don't know.
So the cooperative, they've got the green compostable bags. They've had that for years, but they still use plastic bags. But now, as of about a year, I believe, they've got rid of the plastic bags completely. Also do some online shopping, depending on where people are, because I've done some of this. But the only problem then is that when you order online, it comes in nice green bags. You pay 20p for them, but then your name and your contact details and your livery number are all stuck on them on a label, which people have complained on the internet, because the second you try and take that off, the bag rips, and it's like, yeah, you don't want to really have your... If you're going to use the bag again, you probably don't want a label with all your details on it, do you?
I saw a video of someone on an island, and they were making out... Well, they were tidying up the beach and getting all the plastic items that have washed up, and they're putting them in a big metal barrel and cooking them up into various fractions of fuel oil. I mean, obviously, that's nasty, but it's also was nasty on the beach.
Oh yeah, there was an article a few months back on one of those news websites, you know, that some 10-year-old boy had been picking up litter on the beach with his dad, and he found a crisp packet from 1980 that was, the colouring was mostly washed off, but you could see it was from, like, 1980, yeah. So he was like, oh, this is older than I am, and it's like, yeah.
That's a survivor.
Well, yeah, but that's the whole point. It sticks around in the sea because it's plastic. The colouring might wash off, but the plastic itself...
Yeah, turtles think they're jellyfish, don't they? There's all sorts of nasty going on. There's big islands of the stuff. But how do you... Like, the point I was trying to make earlier is how slow humans are to react to it and change the situation in the time that it appears we have left to solve stuff.
Well, yeah, there's also landfill sites. I read another article, whenever that was, a few months back, whenever that was, about in the UK, there are landfill sites that have been, old landfill sites that have been put by the sea, and now, before they had regulations on where you can do landfill sites, and now a lot of them are basically leaking out their rubbish into the sea now, which isn't great either.
I got a friend way back, and he redeveloped brownfield sites and did, like, asbestos sampling and stuff, and he was looking into getting the license to dig up old landfill sites to reclaim the aluminium from them, because, like, before recycling. I don't know where that went.
I don't know. Oh, that's the point. Well, there must be a way to break down plastic. I think there is, sort of, but that's more seen as that's the future. Let people who aren't even born yet deal with it. That's the attitude, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
For sure. And also, there's a local bloke who sent us the numbers. Like, our local authority, it's a small city of about 60,000, like a big town. And he was saying the local authority sells all of its recycled, the stuff it gets from the plastics recycling bins, to Biffa. And he did the numbers on, like, I think Biffa gave him about £8,000 a year for it. And he was saying, like, properly sorted, that's 60 grand or something. So, like, plastic's one of the things you can recover if you do it properly.
Yeah, where are you based then?
I'm in the Midlands.
Oh, right, okay, I'm in near Bristol.
Yeah, you're more forward thinking over that end.
And what they also used to do, apparently a lot, and maybe they probably still do at times, to be honest, is that they don't, like, you think, oh, I'm going to send a plastic bottle out to my council and it's going to get recycled, or a detergent box, or whatever it is, and apparently a lot of it doesn't just get recycled. In fact, some of it has, in the past more so, been sent off to Indonesia for storage or burning. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard countries are sending it back as well because they're getting such nasty loads of nappies that they just refuse to recycle it and they sent it back to the country. That's China started to do it. But on the subject of local authorities, I was told by ours that they shredded everything. So all of the glass and everything that was going in with the plastics into the same truck and the paper, they just shred all of that and then they blow it up into the air to separate it or something.
I don't know, but it's probably a lot of stuff is not being recycled properly in reality. That's what we do know.
Maybe they just blow up into the air. That's it. I know ours, they incinerate the black bin waste now. And they did win an award for, like, one of the years they got the best for recycling. And then shortly after that, they just stopped doing the compost, like food waste. They said, put all that in the black bin, we're burning it now.
Oh, food waste. Now, that's another one. So I've got a flat and a block of flats, obviously. However, they do not pick up food waste from flats for some reason, but they do take it from houses.
And separately or mixed in?
No, they just say if you're in a flat, but you've got any food waste, just bin it in the normal black bag. They don't take it from flats at all for some reason. I'm not sure why, but they do from houses.
Oh, I don't know. But yeah, they incinerate, they say to us that we'll make energy out of it, so they're incinerating our black bin waste.
That's what sometimes it can do as well. Make energy out of things, which is probably good really, but it obviously costs to do that as well, doesn't it?
It does, but you'd think by now, like I remember thinking this as a kid like 30 years ago in school, 40 years ago in school, that the incinerators, can't they just filter the smoke out? Isn't there some way, like electrostatic or some process where they can... And I know it's expensive and they say they won't do it for that reason, but when you know that money is just like this invented thing and it's all about the energy, then, you know, it seems like, well, won't it be okay if we just stop the stuff coming out?
Somebody said you can I don't know if this is true really, but possibly with some of this, I think you can take the smoke and kind of like store it, then put it in the ground for storage. I'm not sure if that's true quite, but
that sounds like carbon capture and storage. But I'm thinking, yeah, you can, if you can catch it, you can do things with it, like you can put it in a tank and use it for carbon dioxide. But you'd think, like, if there's anything coming out that's a particulate as a smoke, you can either filter it or blow it back in to reburn it. And I know that can be done. And then there's ways, like the chemical waste situation, from you can rinse smoke as well, but then you have to deal with the liquids, all the stuff that's dissolved in the liquids, and there's whole industries relating to dealing with those effluents. But I don't know whether, you know, you can only be interested, I can only interest myself so long in that.
Is Clacky still here? Because what I've heard, I think he hopefully is, because what I've heard before and seen on the news is that obviously China in certain parts has been very, very polluted because they're always making things over there. How he is in Hong Kong, which you can probably debate if that should be China or not, depending on who you're talking to. But and I assume the pollution issue isn't quite as bad there, but maybe it isn't bad enough. I don't know.
Well, it's clearly China. Like it's joined on even pretty much. But yeah, they've got a bad pollution situation industrially, but they've brought a lot of people out of poverty, and maybe they thought they'd clean up the mess afterwards. Or maybe some people think, well, it's a desert anyway. But the fact is, like, poison is poison and it hangs around.
Yeah. Same with car pollution, isn't it? Parts of London are the most polluted places in the UK.
I'd worry about the food, like the water and the food, especially with diminishing freshwater supplies and the encroachment of seawater into agricultural areas, apart from people when they pull out the water from the water table, that allows more seawater to come in, and also with irrigation that brings the salt up to the surface, and then you can't use those fields to grow plants anymore because you obviously can't rinse the salt out of the top layers of the soil. But yeah, I know you can reclaim land with fungus and stuff, but again, you're back into the time constraint of how many harvests you've got left and how much fertility there is left in the soil and when the plants stop flowering and all of that.
Well, I'm thinking car pollution again. Like, I'm in a reasonably built up, well, no, I'm in a busy place when it's the day. It really is busy. There's, cause it's by, I say it's, well, it's by a big city, really, I would say. So I get all the sort of city traffic coming through. And it's just disgusting going out there about 5 o'clock. I tend to avoid that time unless I have to be out there for obvious reasons. Because you just walk out there. Well, you have to walk, you know, walk past the amount of cars and everything. And I'm thinking, like, what am I breathing in here? Really, it's probably not that great. Really, it's just disgusting. And our electric car. I mean, one idea was electric cars are going to take off, but we're not quite there yet. Another idea is I think it was biofuel or something. Again, we're not there yet with that either. And then all the talk about flying cars for just a bit of fun in 2022 now, because of Back to the Future and things, movie, that's fun, but well, we're not getting flying cars anytime soon either. But my point is, we just pollute. It's just pollution coming out at the end.
Biofuels work, but they have their own issues as well.
Clacky's back. Yeah, they have that in Sweden, don't they? Or partly.
Yeah, so Sweden has had quite a few vehicles now that could run off ethanol. Then the problem is, where do you get ethanol? And that's not entirely uncontroversial in itself.
We've got huge energy problems. And if you, you know, I thought back in days when I was thinking of disaster relief and taking food to people, it soon occurs to you that you can bring the people to you for the same weight. And that's not the issue. It's cultural integration. So there's, why do people even need to use cars? You can really rearrange things so that obviously people with mobility needs are going to need vehicles, but with some planning, you can make things more efficient. And to remember that, like, there's cities in Russia where they have to leave the cars running for, like, I don't know how many months of the year, for the winter, basically, 24 hours a day. So they'll park their car and they'll leave it running and they'll come back to it in the morning and get in it and drive off. And if you leave it for, like, half an hour, it just freezes up. And you see all these other cars around that have got, like, 8-inch thick ice just all over them until the summer. And you can't see, you know, the visibility in that city. I forget the name of it. It's like minus 50, usually. It is not very far, you know, like 50 meters or 60 meters or something.
Well, people use cars because, well, sometimes they kind of have to because they really are going long distances. However, a lot of the time they're not really going that long distances. It's just because we're in a country where most people can afford to have cars, and it's all sort of in the system. You need to travel from A to B for work or something, or leisure activity, maybe, whatever the reason is. Sometimes you could walk those distances, or you could possibly get a bus, actually, but then you get back into the, hang on, are there enough buses and all the rest of it, and there probably isn't really. And today I think there's only one bus service running around here, and it's not mine, because I was looking at the local website for that, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's New Year's Day, but you know what? There should probably be a few more buses going even today, because yeah, get people off out of their cars. You can still travel somewhere, but they're not thinking it through very well in that sense. But all their buses aren't perfect either, because they also pollute, of course. But at least it would stop having certain cars on the road potentially, if they're or trams or trains or other ways to get around. But most of our cities and places are not really set up with that in mind. It's just set up for the road.
When you live in a place that looks like Hong Kong, you really don't need. But then in the end, people cars and
well, cars yeah. Are faster, aren't they?
You've got to remember that's the tide of humanity, that people are gonna do what they do, and yeah, you can step out of it if you try. It's how much you care about.
Yeah, if you have a car, it's basically you need a second apartment for the car. It costs about the same price to have a parking as your normal flat. And the car also needs maintenance and insurance. And so it really is, even if you drive every day, it's basically to take the taxi. So it's really most.
No status to say, like, I'm rich or I've got some money, so yeah, I'll have a car. Everyone else, no, I'll go in a cheaper taxi. That makes sense.
It's also habit, and people think, like, if they've got children, then there's school, and then there's hospitals, like, how close am I to the hospital? So there's worry. But it's really an artifact of capitalism, really, like making people feel that they need to do what they do for money, and they're obliged, and therefore there's with all the competition and the urgency, people do that really unusual, like, imagine that big, like, moving a ton of steel around. It's like a big old traction engine, really.
Well, yeah, and also it wasn't really set up for work at home, was it? However, when the first lockdown hit last year, sorry, not last year now, it's the one 2022, obviously. So I'm 2020, right? Well, actually, there's one last place going in 10 minutes, I think, and that means this show is officially over. But we'll carry on doing after show, I think. But anyway, I'm sure Ken will be coming back saying that in a minute. But what I was going to say is, when the first lockdown happened, it was good for pollution because lots of people really were staying at home around the world, I believe, as well. And I went out here, for example. I went to my local shop and there's a car park there and stuff. And like I said, it's usually quite a busy place in the day, but it was lovely because there were, like, hardly any cars on the road. The car park had hardly any cars in it as well. And now we get back to what we call normal, where it's just like I'm saying, there's just cars everywhere when it's busy. I mean, it's nice here in the night time, about after midnight, 2 a.m. normally, because about all I get there for traffic is the bus every hour, ambulances, because there's a hospital nearby or nearby enough, and taxis a bit, and a few cars here and there, and the Royal Mail delivery, because there's a post place down there as well, and that's about it. And you can cross the road, and it's reasonably quiet, and it's just nice. But then, come 5:30 in the morning, on a weekday and stuff, here we go again, you know, it gets busy again. But it was nice in the lockdown, lack of cars, you could sort of go out there, and it was like, oh, that's nice. But yeah, it only lasted so long.
There is a period of time, even if you, at the point where people, if they were to stop emitting a lot of particulates into the air, like smoke and pollution, there's a period where that falls out of the air, which is quite short. And that results in, because all of that stuff is actually blocking energy coming into the earth. Like, it's bad pollution, but ironically, when you stop doing that, there's a period where you get a bit of an increase in global temperature as more radiation can get through because the pollution's not blocking it. It's not that you need that pollution in any way. It's just that that is also going to affect numbers when it drops out.
I think I just remembered something. I watched, partly watched one of those Greta Thunberg documentaries that came on BBC One, right? Last year, or actually I'm going to say 2021 now, aren't I? or whatever, yeah. And I think they were saying something like, with the first lockdown, whilst the cars were off the road, a lot of them and all this, but the factories were closed as well. Apparently, I think this is correct. Apparently, the pollution levels basically went down by sort of like 14 years back to sort of 2006 levels, which isn't perfect, but it kind of shows that there was a difference. And I think they probably meant globally as well here, but that's something, isn't it?
And it shows you what can be done. That people didn't, like, when it came to it, people were so concerned about their own personal safety that they did change their behaviour. But it seems to take that kind of a threat to at least somebody's loved ones, but, you know, to every individual person, for them to actually change their behaviour. And it's nice that that wasn't, like, a war.
You mean... But it's, You mean we're being scared or unsure about COVID? So it's like the first time tickler, so people are basically doing what they're told, no problem, or for the most part. Is that what you meant?
Well, they changed their behaviour, which it seems they weren't willing to do just on the abstract idea that the whole population would die in 100-200 years or something. Like, they're not concerned about that, but if you tell them that they might drown in their own mucus, then they'll change their behavior, and maybe that's, you know, that's just humans for you. Not all of them, to be fair.
Well, I know what you mean. You've got to sort of be scared enough to do something. Your government is telling you to do this now, and a lot of people are going to be like, okay, that might affect me if I catch it. I think that's kind of what you're saying.
Hashtag not all human.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? The way people are thinking more about the quality of their jobs and their lives after they've had this brief kind of imposed meditation on where their life's going. And when they had an opportunity to escape from the normal routine, because they could say, look, what about not dying? Or what about my gran not dying? That they had this other, like, I was surprised that the government's closed down their economies, because they didn't. It's not their default behaviour, which made me wonder what else was going on. But of course, there is pressure that from people, and a lot of those world leaders are around themselves.
I've just thought of something again. Right, let's try and get into the actual show as well, because it's going to finish soon, very soon, I believe. But I just thought of something. Right, the economy, yeah, first lockdown, you're right, they closed the economy because closed the pubs because you're going to socialise, you're going to spread the virus potentially. It kind of makes sense. It all does make sense, really. However, here's the thing, and you're in the UK as well, so perfect, and Europe will have similar things, but obviously here in England, because Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland have done their own thing a bit anyway, Wales have some slight restrictions actually, but we have not had any restrictions put back at the moment, except for the wear a mask in the shop, wear a mask in, and on public transport, taxis, trains, so we basically just had Christmas, a normal Christmas, or pretty much, people socialising, mixing, and New Year's as well. But the question is, are we now going to pay the price for this as a country? When I want to go out and do things, I want to go to the cinema in January. I want to do a hybrid meeting for a public speaking group, which is supposed to be going to plan otherwise and things. But are we going to be potentially paying the price for this now in January? I think he's going to announce on Monday, possibly, Boris Johnson. But, you know, are we going to have a lockdown or some sort of restrictions? Is something coming now? Are we going to pay the price for some of this freedom, do you reckon, or not, is the question.
I'm always wondering about what people in power are doing to protect their power. So, you know...
Yeah, but are we going to get like another lockdown coming in January, or circuit breaker, they call them? Is it going to be more restrictions, or is it going to be like, oh, you know what? Yeah, we'll live with Omicron now. It'll be like a flu and just keep on getting vaccinated, people.
I don't live in a city where it's all close together. So things have been fairly similar for me. I know in the big cities there was way more strict policing. So I'm not sure how much, like, it's difficult for me to comment on. When you say freedom, I think it's a bit of a small issue as far as rural England is concerned. But the wider considerations of authoritarian states, like making the most of any situation, that's more what I'm concerned about.
What do you mean making most of?
They'll always, like, people who are keen on hanging on to power will use every situation. It doesn't matter what it is. So you have to read between the lines and maintain, you know, I'd like to make sure I still talk to all of my friends, not lose touch with people, because history.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been able to do that on the internet and stuff, luckily, but I know that's not what you meant, but I mean, yeah, although if it had been 1990, it would have been much more a problem, wouldn't it? Going in contact with your friends and so on. if there was like a lockdown pandemic that we've just had. And some countries also restrict that more communication, like who you can and how you communicate with people, basically, as well.
And if your whole population is needing to use electronic communication, then it's just the...
I think this is the last place going into the new year. I don't see Ken back, but I assume he's going to close the officials show in a bit, or however it works.
Well, Happy New Year. I've got breakfast to do.
Or midday lunch, brunch, yeah.
I'm hungry.
Happy New Year, Earth, ectoplanets.
Yeah, Happy New Year 22 to the whole world, isn't it? 2022. So now we can have, now I guess it's an after show or whatever happens, isn't it?
I don't know if this distinction is very important.
No, you can talk about something else, that's fine. Jag är svensk också, halv svensk. I've spoken to you before, I remember. And there was another Swedish guy on last night as well.
Uh-huh.
It was called, what was he called? No, I did speak to you before on this a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, I've been on once or twice before. I'm not sure which years, actually.
I think I was on last year a bit. Yeah, I was. And then 2 years ago, I was going to go on, but it didn't happen. I think that's what happened. And then I've been on other ones a bit as well. Is Tony there or not?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you want something? Oh, just checking me.
Well, it was lit up. It's like I want to speak or potentially. So,
no, it's just I haven't got a mute set up. So,
well, you're in England as well, I think. Where are you from?
Blackpool.
Oh, Blackpool. Yeah, that's about as far north as you can get, isn't it? And then you hit Scotland, pretty much, isn't it?
No. There's a few miles before you get to Scotland. It's about an hour and a quarter's drive to the border from here.
It's still an hour and a quarter. It's not that bad then.
Yeah. So where are you based?
I'm by Bristol.
Ah, right. Okay. Well, I've just dropped back in before I go off shopping.
Are the shops actually open where you are? I mean, maybe some are, because it's New Year's Day,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's New Year's Day rather than Christmas Day, so I think they'll be doing bank holiday hours today.
Food shopping, is that?
Well, yeah, I'm going to go to one of the supermarkets, Lidl. I don't know whether you shop in Lidl, but they've got the middle aisles. They call it the middle of Lidl, and you get techie stuff.
Yeah. The guy just now who was on Spoon was also briefly mentioning Lidl, but we were talking about plastic bags and waste and stuff, and he was saying in Lidl it was, I can't remember what he said quite now, but now I've got Lidl. I've got two Lidls quite near me in a way. There's one down the road a bit, kind of, and then the other one's a bit further down the other road. And there's lots of Lidls around here. There's another Lidl down the other place, and there's another one there, and there's another one down there. And it's probably about, I think there was an article about it, and there's about, in Bristol and its surrounding areas, I'm not going to be exact, but it's probably about 15 Lidls or something now. 10 yeah. to 15 Lidls. That's how it really is. A little bit of Aldi around as well.
Yeah, we've got Aldi as well. In fact, Aldi's the closest one, but so I do most of my shop because I tend to walk to the shops these days, and so I tend to walk to Aldi to do the food shopping. But
that's on the middle aisle. I mean, I tend to not. Well, you might look a little bit in Aldi or little Aldi with those, but oh, my mum definitely does. You know, if she goes into one, she'll be looking at the middle aisle, like, is there anything worth buying here or not? Oh, there might be. Oh, let's look.
Well, I'm looking for modelling supplies.
For what?
I restore die-cast models, and they do tools and all sorts of stuff. And
what I was talking die-cast?
Yeah, matchbox.
Like painting, artwork.
Do you know the old matchbox toys?
Sounds kind of familiar, but maybe that's...
Well, you've heard of Hot Wheels, haven't you?
Hot Wheels. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Matchbox were around 15 years before Hot Wheels even was a thought. Back in the early 1950s.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought I was too young when you said Matchbox, maybe.
Well, funnily enough, Matchbox is now owned by the people who, Mattel, who make Hot Wheels, so they compete against each other.
There's some competition. That's probably good.
But they're all made in China these days.
And you can find some of the stuff you're looking for in Lidl at the moment, really?
No, I can find tools for doing restoration and stuff.
Oh, the tools, not the thing itself, but the tools to work with. Yeah.
No, I buy the old beat-up stuff and restore it. So I've got models all over the place.
No, that sounds all right. But a hobby to do as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I did a series for HPR in 2000 talking about it. Do you want to go and check it out?
Yeah, it shows it's been around a long time, this as well.
Yeah, not 2020.
No, it's...
A couple of years ago.
Okay, not 2000, no. But if HPR has been around since 2000, that's... apparently this is a
HBR's term. Been around for 13-14 years, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think we're on the after show now, really, but this was the 10th one, apparently, for the new year thing.
Yeah,
that's what I read somewhere.
Yeah, Ken was saying the after show lasted for quite a long time last year, about 13 hours or something.
I don't know, it might have done. No, I think it was in the previous year because there was one like, right. Well, I kept it going, actually. It was me. And I don't know what's going to happen with this year, but I know I'm not doing much today, to be honest, so it's a bit like,
I'll hang around.
Because it was like, I remember some guy came back from like Australia or New Zealand or somewhere as well. Like, this is about 3-4 years ago, I think now. Probably about 4 years ago. Time flies, doesn't it? And he was like, what? Are people still chatting on here? And I was like, yeah. And then I disappeared eventually, but then somebody else was on. So like, they kept it going. And a bit longer and stuff. I think I might have came back, I'm not sure. And then it got, I think it got to about 19 hours 1 year. It's true, isn't it? 60. Well, I finished there whenever I finished, but some other people kept it going even further. So it got to around, sounds about 19 hours or something. And
I think Ken said it was 19 hours.
Yeah, but this happened about 3-4 years ago, I think. I think it's the one that I kept going.
I got a problem, guys. My monitor's just died.
No, you can come back, I guess, if that's the problem as well.
My monitor has literally just died.
But you can't see very well.
I can't see anything. I can see what's happening.
Things dying or going wrong. I mean, I got a phone, mobile phone, which is having problems as well. Not that I'm using that now as such. I'm just trying to charge it, but I've got problems. I don't know what's wrong with that quite.
Sometimes if the battery goes really to zero, it won't charge.
Yeah, it seems to be the battery or related or the charging port, I thought at first, but it's like it charges. The cable is doing something, but then it's like I had it charging or so I thought the other night, and then I don't done it last night. I've changed the charger. As well, the charger's plugged in, so it might make some, I don't know. But it's like it's powered on now, but it's probably only going to say it's on about 4%, 6% again, I assume, if even that, and then it will power off again. So it's could be battery related, or it is the charging port, or it's maybe the cable, but it's probably not so much the cable actually. And it's done it, and also it can power itself on as well. Like I had it turned off, this phone, but when it used to go to 100%, nice green light, and then it would actually turn itself on again, but now it's like done something similar again, it's just turned itself on again properly, but I assume if I have a look now, it's going to be on very little battery when I log in and it'll go power off. So
right, I'm going to go, guys. Wish you all a happy new year.
If you want to pop back later, who knows, there might be something happening still.
You may be, but I'm off to spend some money now.
That's good. No, well, keep no, fair
going. Who was that?
Clacky. Keep the economy going.
Yeah, okay. I might see you later. I might bob in, see if there's anyone still hanging around when I get back.
And then, and it's probably going to be on really low battery, and it's... Oh, I might send it off to a friend who... I don't know quite. I've got this one friend, he really does fix all this kind of stuff. Laptops, for my Linux user group as well. Laptops, tablets, phones, sometimes other things, you know, that's what he does. That's what he's been doing since 2009. But it's annoying when tech goes wrong. We did have that chat last night, with Ken's son, kind of, but... Well, that's to do with magic and things as well, but it's just annoying when tech goes wrong like that, because really we just want the thing to work, don't we, and properly.
Yeah, I have this phone that's been in a drawer for 4 years, and I just bought a new battery. Easier to find a cheap source here in Sweden, so I hope I can get that device back up running again, and maybe I can put off any more phone purchases for us.
Yeah, although it's a Sony Spirit X, and my friend said to me once, he said to me, like, oh, well, if you break the screen on that one, it'll be difficult to fix. So maybe that's true, but I don't know, something not quite right there. I'm thinking of actually getting a different SIM, or can we get this one taken out? Probably, really, it's just a bit awkward in the particular phone, but... somebody recommended a different network as well, and I thought, maybe just as my spare phone, because I'll put it in a different phone, because I've got other phones too, I could do that or something, but it is annoying.
I felt a bit bad because while I was here, I was checking out the secondhand store, and I finally found a phone that was supposed to be open for upgrades and installing LineageOS. So I went and bought that, and I actually got LineageOS working finally, like 3 years. But I felt a bit bad because this was the first phone I bought when I didn't have a good excuse to buy it. I was just because I wanted to find a phone that I could run over a Lycon. But then after I got that working, I was talking to my wife on the phone, and she said, actually, I'm looking for a new phone. And I thought, yes, then I have a good use for this spare phone.
LineageOS, I heard of that. It's supposed to be quite good, apparently. It changes Android a bit. But actually, this phone here that I'm talking about is a Sony Xperia X. I got it about 2 years ago. And the reason I bought it is because, and I still haven't done it, because of, you have to do it obviously with your laptop, you have to spend the time on it and all the rest of it, and make sure it's done right or it's not going to work. But I am intending on reflashing that with Sailfish OS. Have you heard of that? I don't know. At some stage. And also I got a Fairphone 3 2 years ago, which I've kept my old smartphones. I've got 11 smartphones, basically. starting in 2013 to more recently. And there's also one I found somewhere, but that's a side point. I'm not counting that. That's a broken thing anyway. Cause one was like an S3 mini, which was my first smartphone was actually a Samsung Galaxy S3 mini in 2013. Which, you know, sounds probably believable at the moment. But I've said this, I've said this on the podcast before. And then since then, I've had things like two Ubuntu phones and a Tizen phone and a Firefox OS phone, not used as a phone, but because I was interested in operating systems. I've had this phone I just mentioned. I've got an iPhone SE. I've got a Fairphone 3, which was my last phone, which I could have bought with EOS pre-installed, to be honest, but I didn't do that. I got it on my network. I was supposed to get a free headset, never got it because of issues claiming. But that one I'm going to reflash with. I want to try this EOS out, I think, that I was reading about. It's Android with more privacy, a bit like Linux OS, I believe, started by the Mandriva or Mandrake founder as well, the French guy.
Yeah, so why is Fairphone currently your previous phone? Is there some issue?
Fairphone 3, I just haven't really done that much with it, although that is the most recent phone I've brought so far, you know. and partly because partly because it's got Android, and I know it's got Android. I didn't want to start using Android on it too much, because it could become like the phone I've been using, where you're just using Android, and it's like, hang on a minute, no, I bought this specifically, really, because I'm intending on getting rid of Android myself at some stage. I don't want to, and I want to put something else on. And also, the Fairphone 3 also uses the newer cable, the micro USB-C or whatever the newer one is. And I've got one or two other devices that are like that as well, but everything else is the old standard micro USB 2 or cable or whatever for charging, you know. And then it's like, oh, where's my newer cable? Where's the right cable? Because all these cables lying around, you know, at times.
Yeah. Oh, I've got two computers at home that can charge with the USB-C cable now. I've got my latest phone is also USB-C, so I got quite a good population of USB-C cables.
And yeah, but yes, yeah, cable thing partly, I should get another SIM anyway, because I used to have a different network I kept as my network, so I didn't have to use it properly, but I lost my number because I didn't activate my account last time. Every 6 months, are you still alive? Yeah. Okay, log in and prove it, do something, send a text, make a call, or maybe do a form post or something in the account. And I did it twice, but then the third time round I got caught out because I didn't do it in time. Your number's going to expire on do-do-do, and I contact them like, nope, your number's gone, it's going to be recycled, we're going to pull the numbers, but somebody else could potentially get it in four years' time. And I was like, really? And I said to them, and I was like, well, in that case, you know what, I'm going to just leave. I mean, I would have kept this network, but I've got something else here now. So it's like, but I used to have a spare proper number. I've got a landline, but that's tied into my other stuff with internet and so on. And it's not good, because if I make a call on the landline, I get charged for it per minute or whatever. And it's like, I don't want to do that. If somebody calls me on the landline, like my mum or someone, that's fine. But if I make a call myself, I'm being charged per minute or whatever, and I don't want to do that. So that's not much good, really. Plus, it's an annoying place, but that's a side point. But I'm interested in operating systems. I'm not a programmer, as I said last night to, to other people saying that last night as well, but I do find operating systems interesting, or quite frankly, you know, that's what I'm in. I do, yeah, I'm interested in operating systems, and I'm not Windows obviously, or Mac that much, but obviously Linux, because for obvious reasons. So, I mean, the desktop Linux is one thing, but then you've got, like, mobile Linux and stuff. It's not going to hit the mainstream. It's very niche. Things like the Ubuntu Touch now carrying on the UB ports, which is a community. What they're doing is amazing. There's going to be a big Greeter update soon, I believe. Or I was reading about some update that's coming. Sailfish OS from a lot of the former Nokia people when the old Nokia collapsed. And the community. There's Tizen. I've got a phone on from India, really, but that's Samsung's plan B if they want to drop Android. Firefox OS, I never used it as an actual phone, but that was used like using web technologies, and that was something, I guess, as well, really. I find the operating system is the experience. You're going to know what I mean. Desktop Linux, we get a good we get a good experience. Usually the web distro will pretty much really. And then obviously it depends on what programs you have with it partly as well and your user interfaces and all the rest of it. Whereas if you use a Windows laptop on the other hand, although I have heard that Windows 11 apparently is that little bit better than Windows 10, for example, but I'd say I get a worse experience using a computer. And you'd probably agree with me. And the Mac, I don't really have a Mac, but you'd get something probably in between Windows and Linux in a way, with a lot of eye candy and good, and it looks good on the graphics and hardware to some extent.
Yeah, I would like to try something that is not Android on the phone. I did Lineage on this one because I know that Lineage is the thing that has the best device support, and to see if just something works or if the phone is blocked. So now I've got Lineage on it, and then I'll maybe seek out to see if any of the other non-Android operating systems work on it. But actually, Ubuntu Touch or UbiPorts, I think, used to support this phone, but doesn't anymore. They support the S5, but they dropped the S6. And of course, they say patches welcome, and they would like people to step in as maintainer, but I'm quite sure I don't have time for that.
Yeah, so, well, things like saying post-market OS and what that can do things. There's, I'm thinking what else there is. You know, there's a KDE mobile project as well. I don't think it's that usable, but you can do something. If you got, I've got a Pine phone, or it's a developer edition, so I need to still kind of set that up. I can't really use it anyway, but you can run things like, and that's cheap as well, the Pine phone, and good. And you can, and I think, yeah, you can run things like Manjaro KDE, but for a phone on it and things. And actually, that's what they have by default now. They didn't go with UbiPorts or Sailfish, they went with this Manjaro for some reason, but like on the desktop Arch Linux based thing, I not really used it, but you can but yeah, PinePhone, you can run all kinds of different operating systems with that on it, and as if you look on that, and it's cheap to buy as well. And then I've forgotten, I haven't really mentioned the Purism M phone because I don't have one, but obviously they have their own stuff as well, but that's expensive. That's a ridiculous price. American, but it's a privacy respecting phone where you can kill, you got hardware kill switches on your camera and microphone and things like that, and also the PinePhone do that as well somewhere in there. But yeah, we the operating systems are, I mean, the UbiPorts is quite impressive really as well because of what it is. It's in the background, it's very kind of desktop like really, the way it, how it, you know, compare the normal Ubuntu on the desktop to,
yeah,
the,
you can run apt-get on it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, you can run apt-get. It's very similar to the normal Ubuntu on the desktop. It's based on well, I think they're working, well, they tend to do it on the LTS, or they're trying update that times, but I think the latest one is 16.04 based though, and they're working on trying to rebase now on 20.04 LTS, but you know, it's very desktop like in the background. You can do, you can run a terminal app on it, you can do things like that. Then you've got the interface, Unity 8 port, and that's just interesting. But Sailfish is also interesting because it's got like BTFS file system, and it's got I think it had Pulse Audio on it. I'm just thinking, I've got the old Yola phone, which is, ooh, maybe that's one that, oh, that's out there, or is that in the drawer, I'm just thinking. But they use BTFS, they had interfaces, they, I was thinking, what else did Yola do? Pulse Audio, Systems out, System D, I think, even on the Sailfish OS, I'm not, can't remember quite. But they did some interesting stuff there, like BTFS file system as well, so they kind of doing something interesting. Every phone is, you can run Android apps on the Sailfish OS using their own, how do they do it? Some, I think it's proprietary software probably, but yeah. They let you run Android apps You can do Android apps on Tizen with their thing as well, to an extent. I've got a phone. And then UB Ports have tried to do it the open way using the Yandbox project, but I heard a few months back that, well, I actually asked them in the IRC channel and stuff. I was like, why is it not working on, why can't you do it on like the BQ or the MX4? And it was like, because you can only just about do it on the tablet, it sounded like them, because it needs a lot of resources. And but they were working on getting some sort of Android support, Android app support to it, at least via a different project. But Chronicle never intended that anyway. I think their idea was you're not going to run Android apps with Ubuntu Touch originally. But and that's the other problem. It comes back to apps, obviously. Oh, can you run all these little silly WhatsApp, for example, or TikTok, or whatever else is popular at the time? And if you go and say, oh, no, my phone can't run those apps, or you say, oh, you can kind of run those apps, but you need to set up, then you basically lost the mainstream market already, because people aren't going to do it, usual people. It's people like us who want to play around with operating systems, but not the usual person. And so we're stuck with Android and iPhone being market leaders. And apparently, actually, Windows Mobile was quite good. A few people have told me here and there, but that had that problem as well. They didn't have enough apps, apparently.
Yeah, so of these solutions to run Android stuff on not Android, how many do you try personally?
Well, yeah. So I've got the old Yola phone. I was thinking, where's that? Or that maybe that's behind me as well. That's got Sailfish OS on it. But that was Sailfish OS 1.0, because this is a few years ago. I never upgraded that phone properly because there's been a load of updates to Sailfish OS since. I've got I tried to get a tablet crowdfunding, but that didn't work out. And another project doing something similar, lost money on that as well. Great. Actually got a refund for the tablet. But anyway, right, Sailfish OS, I've tried at least 1.0 a bit, but like I said, it's had a lot of updates since that. UB Ports, I've tried. I could do with updating my MX4 again, but I'm mostly up to date on that anyway. So Ubuntu Touch or UB Ports, done that. And I've used that on my MX4 as a real phone for about 2 years. I've got a BQ. I had a tablet, although the screen is broken, and there's actually got another tablet as well, because somebody bought me that, can fix my screen. Tizen on the Samsung. I bought a Samsung Tizen SZ1 phone on eBay from India, because that's what they were trying out in India. I've not used it as a real proper phone with making calls and texts. However, I have installed a few, like Angry Birds via the Android app support and things like that, so I've used that to some extent. Am I missing something? Firefox OS. I bought a cheap Firefox OS phone a few years back. It was already like 5 years old as well. Not used it as a real phone, but I've booted up and looked at it and done a few little things here and there with it. So, I mean, they've dropped that. It's only on smart TVs now, I think, Panasonic possibly. But, and I haven't done Linux OS yet. I want to do EOS, that's an Android-based one. I've had something called Remix OS Ultra Tablet in the past, that all got dropped. That was also based on Android. It was actually using the Windows x86 project, where you're basically porting Android to a normal PC, Android x86, and then they sort of forked that. They forked that and came out with a tablet and also Remix Mini, which these devices have stopped. They don't do those anymore. But Remix Mini, not really use that, but I could plug it into my TV and I've got like a smart TV thing, I think. There's some interesting stuff that pops up here and there, but some of it just dies out and the rest lives on in some form. It depends a bit.
Did you know that Firefox OS is actually still alive under?
I did say it's under Panasonic smart TVs, I think, and it could have been forked again. What's the name?
Yeah, it's Kai OS, and they're actually selling the loads of phones in Brazil.
Kai OS. I have seen that somewhere. I think I was going to nearly buy a phone once with that or something, but I didn't. But yeah, okay, so it still is going. That's good.
Yeah, so I don't think it's super important with like WhatsApp and TikTok and those things. But if I'm going to have a phone that I carry around in a pocket, it's really good if I can put like the bank apps and those things. So it's still interesting to see how well those Android wrappers work, you think.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Maybe not so much TikTok, WhatsApp. Okay, bank apps. And that's the, yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I haven't used the latest versions, but I have a feeling that, but when I did, but saying that, when I, on my original Jola phone, what I did, when I did that, I tried out loads of Android apps in their support. I just threw pretty much anything at it, or nearly. It was like, right, I'll have that app, I'll try this, I'll try that, and I started playing games on it and all kinds of things, and it actually worked quite well. Although I did end up eventually sort of bricking the phone, as that was called. It went wrong because I'd installed a version of the app that was made for like Qt 5 or something, and the support on the particular version of the operating system was Qt 4, I think, and it just sort of broke the whole thing, and I had to like reflash it. I had to do a reset by the computer once, but that was then. That was years ago. But before that, I was trying out all kinds of apps for my Android, and what I found is that pretty much everything I threw at it seemed to work enough. Some stuff might look a little bit odd with the interface, but I'm talking like 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago now, and I have a feeling that the Android support under Sailfish OS has probably improved quite a bit since then as well, and also the operating system itself, obviously. But as to if it can run bank apps or not, I can't answer the question, but I have a feeling that it quite possibly could.
Yeah, that sounds better than I expected. I'd encourage. On the other hand, the bank apps, so I had one phone where I installed the bank app, and then it said, specifically the phone you have, we're not going to support that because we know there's some issue for some security. So maybe they will have the same attitude towards running some Android wrapper.
Yeah, I think, well, it was one of the sort of selling points that Sailfish OS had, I think, because actually that, like, yeah, we can run Android apps, and that was one that they actually wanted to run Android apps. Tizen, you have to get a phone from India or somewhere, that, and no one really uses that. That's, like I said, Samsung's plan B if they want to drop Android, I think. But that had some sort of Android app support. If you want Android apps and you go Ubuntu Touch, it's probably the wrong operating system, because the only way you can really do it currently is this Ambox, and it doesn't, and I don't think it works particularly well on the devices that do support it still. So that's probably the wrong one for that. But I have this, but Sailfish, I just have a feeling, we'd have to find some developer or someone, ask them that, but if you really want to know, but I have that feeling that it, like I said, it probably could do your Android, the banking apps. You might have to trick it somewhere and go, hey, I'm buying this on Android, or I don't know how it works quite, but I've had, yeah, it's quite possibly. You're stuck with Linux OS or one of those Android-based operating systems that are basically Android but with more privacy, which isn't really a proper alternative, but it's, in a way, but it's better than, well, it's still something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more like it's a start, something. I don't think it's a long solution.
No, EOS is another one. Basically Android with the privacy more so, and although I think it says, you can break the permissions and go, I'll have this app, and it'll go, oh, we need access to this, that, and the other, and you're like, okay, but then you might have broken some of the privacy settings anyway because you install some other app. But yeah, it's still about apps. So I mean, I've only just started doing online banking with my bank, because they, for years they were trying to get me on it. They used to send keys or something in the post, I think, and it was activate this, and I tried, I couldn't do it, or I gave up, or I don't know. But then they were saying, hey, if you join recently, we'll give you £10 as well for using the banking app. And I thought, okay, I'll have £10 from the bank for using the banking app. Sure, why not? And I've got it on my phone, and it, But then I'm used to paper statements, and I was like, I want to have my paper statements, and I couldn't find a setting, I think, where I could just enable that, or have to ring them again and say, send me it in the post as well. But yeah, you can keep an eye on your money a bit better instead of phoning up each time to the automatic system.
Yeah, with my Swedish bank, I've never bothered with paper statements because I can always go on the website and I can get all my history back to. But in the Hong Kong banks, they're like, oh, you want the online statement? Well, we're going to give you 6 months or maybe a year. And then if you want to go further back, it's just, they're just not going to provide it. So if I want to go back and check something, oh, did I pay this month? I'm still receiving the paper statements because then I'm sure I have the record. Suddenly you want the records and then...
Yeah, so on the app it goes back about 5 years on mine, I think. Although I think if I ask the bank still, I can go back to even further. But, well, on the subject of banking statements as well, I mean, it depends on who people are. But what I've noticed, especially via the pandemic as well, is that it basically dictates it. I mean, it not dictates, it shows what I have been doing or not been doing in general, in a general sense. Like, okay, I've been shopping for food at this shop, or I did an online shop here, that's one thing. Or I've got bills here and there. It's not something about the bills, but it should be like, okay, I went to the cinema on da-da-da day, I paid to go to the cinema, or I went to a pub on this day, or I went away possibly, something that doesn't happen that often, but sometimes. And it basically shows what I've been doing or not been doing in the month, because unfortunately most things are about money these days, isn't it? If you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't really read my statements that way. So I just shove them in a box.
Yeah, but well, I've been shopping differently and it showing on the month here, and it sort of worked with my bills, etc. as well, but I don't know. I mean, they can be useful. Some people don't bother with them at all. They just go, well, I don't need to read my statement because I just shop in the same place and there's nothing exciting on it. But like I said, it depends on who people are, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I'd notice if there's a surprising end balance on what's going on. Otherwise, yeah, it's pretty much predictable.
Yeah, and if there's a weird transaction thing you're supposed to look for as well, yeah. And then I thought about changing bank occasionally. I don't know, because it's more just a place to store money in my case, and that's it, really. I get no proper benefits, or hardly, or nothing proper, so it's like, But, yeah, we have to... Well, I guess we have to have some sort of bank account, really. That's just how it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. And storing things in a... Storing money in the mattress doesn't...
Under a mattress, no. Or in a safe, I watched Die Hard again. It was on the 23rd of December, right? On TV here. ITV, yeah. I mean, the day before Christmas Eve. So, I mean, the debate, I hope you've seen Die Hard, but the debate is, of course, if that is really a Christmas movie or not. That's one thing. It's all about stealing the money from the safe or whatever as well. Great, great film. Showing its age a bit now, though. It really is. Got a one-off showing, I think a 20-year anniversary showing about 2 years ago in the cinema as well. And it's about lots of films like that, really, all about breaking in, stealing the money from the safe and all that, you know. Or more recently, getting into a computer and getting some bank account and doing an electronic transaction maybe as well, yeah.
He does write that note, ho, 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 now I got a Christmas gun, now I got a machine, and I think that seals it, then it's a Christmas movie.
At the end as well, they're going like, Merry Christmas and all that, And there was a decoration that falls in the office block that I noticed, I was like, oh yeah, yeah. And you see it again later on in the film as well. It's like, okay. It is a Christmas movie, really. It's just not the standard one that you're going to think of. But neither is a Christmas horror, because there's a few of those. Like Krampus. There's a 2015...
Yeah,
have you seen Krampus?
I haven't. I would like to.
You've heard of it. Well, I think there's three. There's a 2015 version, which I saw in the cinema originally, and I've seen again on TV. I think I've got a DVD or something. And I think there's another two versions as well. But that was, Krampus. I'd say watch Krampus if you want a Christmas horror, because that was something for what it was. I think somebody else turned up, or did they?
Yeah, there was some tingle going. Another good movie to ask if it's a Christmas movie is A Nightmare Before Christmas. Is it a Halloween movie or is it a Christmas movie? I claim it's both.
Which one? A Nighttime?
A Nightmare Before Christmas, where the town of Halloween kidnaps the town of Christmas, basically, or Santa Claus anyway, and take over Christmas and do Christmas on behalf of Christmas Town, because Jack the Pumpkin King, he's upset that everyone is always scared of him. He wants to contribute to Christmas, and of course, everything goes horrible.
I can't think if I've seen it or not. I mean, I possibly have, but I'm not sure now.
It's a Tim Burton movie. It's clay figure animation. It's Danny Elfman's music, so it's quite characteristic. If you've seen just a brief scene of it, you will know if you've seen the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. And I was thinking there was another film where, like, there's one called Bad Santa, but I don't think that's the one I'm thinking of. But there was another film where you get like a nasty Santa and stuff, and I can't remember what that was called now. One of these low budget horror movies that were made, I think. But I remember I enjoyed whatever I'm thinking of. But and at the end, in the credits, all about naughty boy and girls list as it went down. Now, I like that, actually. The producers of the film and stuff, and it was like, right, this person is naughty, that person is good, and in the credits at the end, they did that, which I thought was a nice little touch. Now, this one's on the naughty boy list, and that one's on the naughty girl list, a good list, but I can't, what was that film called? It's on the Horror Channel in the UK. Is Archer 72 here?
I think it's Billy Bob Thornton, and it's a comic.
Is Archer 72 here?
Here, but I think they're speaking.
Yeah, there's a message in the chat, wasn't there? A link.
Oh, yeah, there's... Oh, Archer, so are you listening to the web stream in the chat? Is that what...
No, the web stream will be on the other thing, so he's still on Mumble. You can see him here on Mumble on the list.
But they muted the speaker on Mumble, so I thought maybe they just went on Mumble for the chat and getting audio somewhere to be responding.
I'm not sure why he's only talking in the chat, but he's responding in the chat. So we had something about Die Hard there as well, by the looks of it.
Oh, so there's a Hacker Public Radio episode on the topic of Die Hard.
That's what he linked to. I will have to listen to that, but not now, obviously. But I'll listen to that one, I think. So yeah, Die Hard. So like we said, Christmas movie, but also there's like four Die Hards now, maybe five even. One, two, three were the main ones, and there's this one more with like a computer hacker, as they say, yeah. And then there might be one more, I'm not sure.
Yeah, too many as far as I'm concerned. Die Hard and Die Harder, that would be...
Bit like The Matrix. There's been one, two, three. There's been a cartoon. You better have seen The Matrix. I mean, come on. And the other guy. And the other guy as well. Whoever that is. So I assume we know what we're talking about. Right, Matrix 1, 2, and 3. Which was a trilogy, and there's been like a cartoon thing, I think, as well. But now they've just released Matrix 4 out in the cinema, and I do want to go and watch it. I haven't done that yet. I've read some reviews on Facebook on the thing. Some people going, oh, it's awful, there are too many flashbacks. Other people were like, no, this was good. It added to the story, it was one of the better, it was good. But some people think, I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, should it have even been made? Wouldn't it ruin the original trilogy? But no, it's probably going to be good for what it is. But they're going on about Spider-Man in the cinema and the other film. Spider-Man and stuff. Another hyped up Marvel film. I mean, there's too many Spider-Man's good, but there's too many Marvel films coming out and stuff. But yeah, hopefully I can go this month now, January, and later on and get down there, and I've got a choice of two cinemas nearby. One is a bit older and it's not really as nice, and but it's one that's more popular because a lot of people go there normally. And the other one is actually nice and it costs a little bit more. Got some days with discount, you get some credit back on the card, and it's a lot nicer down there, but it's right bang in the centre of the city as well. But I'll be going down there to watch this. Matrix is great. And I got to see the anniversary showing of that about 2 years ago as well in the cinema. It's the sort of 20 year anniversary of the first one. Matrix is just amazing as well. It's one of those films. Die Hard is good for what it is. And there are other films like that too, those kind of like must-see films, you know.
I think for Spider No Way Home, if you're a Marvel completionist, you should see it. If you're a huge Spider fan, you should see it. But otherwise, the story is pretty much told in the trailer.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It wasn't amazing, no pun intended, but it was good. It was basically what I expected, just a lot of fan service and references. And it was quite enjoyable. It was nice to see some interaction between these different generations of Spider-Man. It was quite funny.
Did you see that in Sweden?
No, I saw it just before I left. I saw it with my son in Hong Kong.
So in Hong Kong, do they just leave it in English and give you some subtitles in Hong Kong, yeah, or in Chinese or whatever? Or what do they do?
Yeah, live action is really in the original.
So they put some subtitles down the bottom, do they, for Chinese as well?
Yeah, if it's a cartoon, they might dub it, but never.
Yeah, I saw like The Simpsons. I think in Sweden or Germany, well, probably Germany actually, but in like German before, I think, and it was like really.
Yeah, in Germany, they dub everything.
Yeah, in Sweden, don't tend to. Well, they do with some stuff, I guess, but it's more about the subtitles.
Yeah, in Sweden, it will happen for like cartoons, but for live action.
Also, when we get like some of the like crime thrillers and some of the Swedish stuff on the TV here, we can find it on some of the paid channels sometimes or content. Like there's a few Swedish movies out on Netflix, for example, in the UK version, and that I was meaning to watch. But we've had things like Wallander on BBC4. Before and The Killing, which is a Danish thing, but there was another Swedish thing once, I think. But what's sometimes interesting as well, when as somebody who is half Swedish, you know, so if I'm watching a Swedish movie or TV program here and it's got English subtitles, I think with my mum when she was doing it, you usually try and ignore those English subtitles as much as possible unless you need them for some reason. But what's interesting sometimes is how things just don't translate properly as well. and sometimes you get some quite funny examples in a way when you know, like, what they're really saying in Swedish. And then the translation in English or whatever, it's just wrong. And I think it can happen the other way around as well. It's just, you know, it's like, really?
Yeah, I think subtitles, it's a business that used to be like almost like a guild. It was a few people doing it. It wasn't so much stuff to translate, so they could have these people doing a proper job and putting the time into it. And these days it's all done on the lowest possible margin. There's really a lot of mistakes. And that's before counting that there's some stuff that is really difficult to translate, even just some run pretty bad these
days. Yeah. And some words just don't translate anyway. It's like some Swedish names, they just don't go. Like, you know, people's actual names, you translate that into English, and some of it could come across kind of offensive, even or just funny. and I can, you know, I can think of a few examples, and you probably could as well. Some stuff just doesn't work. It's like I could not offensive, but like It's a bit like some names just don't work in general. Like my mum's parents and stuff were called Brant Baru, right? Brant Baru, if I'm saying that clearly enough. And you translate that into English. Steep mountain? Huh?
Yeah, you shouldn't really translate them.
It just doesn't work. It's like, hello, Femidig, whatever you call the Steep Mountain. What? And there's worse examples than that. It's just like, whoa.
And then there are names that, not because you try to translate them, it's a perfectly reasonable name in one language, and it looks terrible in another language. For example, in Sweden, it's not a super weird name. You can be named Puke, and when an English-speaking person sees that name, they read it like Puke, which is not very international relation.
No, and there's another one as well that I'm thinking of. I don't want to say it on there. but that one comes out even worse than that, probably.
Yeah, there's loads of examples of product names as well that didn't travel well.
Yeah. And that's why I got called Sebastian, because it works between the two languages, and Christopher does as well, Chris and Freddy and other names as well. But some names don't work between the languages very well at all. Clacky, Clark. Yeah, that sort of works. There's a shoe company here called Clark's.
Oh, yeah.
They make, shoes, obviously, or we'll sell them. I think they've been around a long, long time, actually. But, yeah, it's interesting with, and it also, yeah, it's interesting with languages like that, just how some stuff just doesn't work. And sometimes they don't have the right English word for some of the Swedish stuff as well. And then, I mean, just general translation is one thing, but then also things like phrases and stuff and quotes and stuff like that. That can be, and English is full of it. There's loads of different sayings and slogans and phrases that can be used. And I know sometimes it surprises me, like, how did I know that saying? Where did I get that from? How do I know how to use that? And it just comes naturally, and you just say something sometimes. You're like, sometimes I Googled something, and I thought, just checking that was correct what I was saying. But okay, yeah, it was correct. But it's like, how has that come from? How do I know how to use that phrase and that saying? And Swedish, I suppose it probably has some as well, but it's not as bad as English for that. English is full of it. And that's the thing with learning a language. It's like I do public speaking groups, and I'm on the roles, and they do them all around the world, 140 countries. It's a part of a international thing, but one of the roles that they have at times, not always, in a meeting, a standard meeting, is the grammarian, where the idea is somebody's supposed to look at the language and the phrases and tell people what kind of language they use. And some people do this really well, and they go like, yeah, that's alliteration, that's power of three, that was this quote, that was whatever. But be like English teachers. But it's interesting because everyone can learn, even a native speaker, you can still learn things in English. And I mean, they teach English at school as well. Like, you aim for a C grade in the GCSE. But, you learn some of the literature as well, possibly. But we're always learning, kind of thing. I don't know every single word in English. And no one does. A dictionary has few words have been added in more recent years, like probably COVID is down as being a real word now, for example, and coronavirus also.
The Swedish Academy, they publish a list of new words every year. This year, 2021, one of the words was, for example, hybrid meeting.
Oh, they got it as a proper word now, have they?
Yeah.
Hybrid meeting, yeah. Earlier, was that last night? Were you on last night? Oh, I don't know.
Yes.
Were you on last night as well? Well, yeah, with the other Swedish guy.
I was around 2 UTC. I got on for.
Oh, right, yeah, hybrid meeting, COVID, COVID-19, as they've been calling it. I assume you could, even though that's got a number in the name as well, really, I assume you can put that down as being a real word now in a dictionary, really. And hybrid meeting has become a term. Face masks, face coverings, they can call them here instead. That's like a term. What else is there? Lockdown. Yeah, lockdown has become a big general usage term. I mean, lockdown was a word anyway before, but not quite as big as it is now, not quite to this extent. Now it's like, ooh, lockdown, ooh. Pandemic has become a big word, and also the other one, epidemic, is it? Epidemic? That's become like words that we all kind of know now, or start to know. And there's probably some other ones too.
Yeah, I'm looking up the Swedish list. They don't list if words have become more common knowledge or more in general use or any of that, just words that are new coinage.
Yeah, it's interesting though. Even not just COVID, but it's just in general. But yeah, there are other words I can't think of. So, I mean, I know something else. I think there was an article like, oh, this is now a real word. And like, oh, is that okay? Or the Collins English Dictionary now has this as a real word. And it was like, okay. I can't remember what it was now, but things do get added here and there. They really do.
Yeah, okay. They do have some words here that are actually not like new words, but they are new as official words in the dictionary. So they've been used before, but now they're prominent enough to the dictionary.
Like what?
Crowdfunding, which is now a Swedish word, literally crowdfunding.
How does it? Yeah, but that sounds more English.
It's a long word and it hasn't been adapted in any way. People just say crowdfunding.
Yorkster, you're crowdfunding.
yeah.
Well, I suppose, I guess it's kind of makes sense because if you want crowdfunding in general, or you're thinking internet, if you know what we're talking about, it's an internet thing. Usually, internet is global. And then crowdfunding is what we say in English. So if you try and translate that, my Swedish, I'm thinking, try and translate that directly because I can't think of what it is. I'm not going to go on Google Translate and go, hey, let's put crowdfunding in and see if it gives me a Swedish translation because I've got a native Swede I'm talking to anyway. What would crowdfunding be directly in Swedish?
If you translate like component for component, it would be flockfinansiering, but I don't think anyone would say that. It would sound a bit silly in Swedish.
So flockfinansiering?
Yeah, flock for crowd or herd.
Yeah.
And then finansiering for finance.
Yeah, that sounds right. No, that sounds a bit like a mouthful, doesn't it, actually?
Yeah, so people just say crowdfunding.
Crowdfunding sounds easier, doesn't it? Like...
Yeah, so apparently filter bubble is a new word, filterbubbla.
For what? What's that referring to?
The filter bubble, where when you search for things or you discuss with people, you only encounter things that agree with your own position.
Oh, right, I don't know that one, but okay, yeah.
So where platforms like even Google Search, but certainly Facebook and so on, they shape your search to what you already know, and so that means you don't get exposed to contradicting opinions. That's your filter. They filter out so that you're in a bubble of opinions, and you think that your opinion is the general.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. Filter out things you don't agree with, sort of thing.
Yeah. This one, I haven't followed the Swedish media very much, so I haven't seen this one before. Plastbanta, so going on a plastic diet. I suppose that's reducing your use of plastic.
Plastbanta?
Banta, yeah, that's when you go on a diet, try to restrict...
Oh, yeah, banta's diet, isn't it? Yeah. Plastic. I like the sound of that. Plaster bite, because if that wouldn't work in English, so that would just sound weird in English. I'm going on a plastic diet. It just doesn't work, does it? In Swedish, it works. It sounds good. But in English, It's like, what? You're going on a plastic diet? You're going to be eating plastic, are you? No, that's not what I meant. Yeah.
Apparently one is becoming a hipster now because skägg olja is one of the new words. Beard oil.
Was it beard oil?
Beard oil.
What's that? Hipster.
I assume it's
making a beard, for making
keeping
oil.
Your beard in good and shiny shape.
Hipster, yeah, we've got that in English. There's a Swedish word, is that, or is it the same?
And växtbaserad, plant-based.
Say that again, Swedish?
Växtbaserad.
I like the sound of both. I'm actually vegetarian myself, so not vegan though, but I do look obviously for plant-based food as a result, or and a little bit of cosmetics, but that's more the vegan thing. You go all the way, maybe make sure your shampoos are plant-based and your detergent and clothes ideally and all the rest of it, but that's a bit far. But I plant-based food. Plant-based is a very common, well, becoming a more common term in the UK. And actually, in saying that, in January, they've been doing something called with January the last, I don't know how many years now, really, but the idea is to, the idea is to come, to get people to try out being a vegan for 30 days. Or that's a challenge they have. And also the companies have been embracing that. More recently, the big, like, even McDonald's and some of the big companies and the smaller ones. And you find there's more vegetarian or vegan food out in the shops suddenly a bit, or in fast food or restaurants. And they got certain products and they're not sure what they're doing for this year quite, because I haven't looked, but that's reminded me I should be looking at that. But, and the companies are embracing it, and then some of it sticks around if there's enough for a market for it afterwards. And 2 years ago, I did January here, tried some of the food out, then I went to Brussels for Fosdem again. Fosdem, you've had a Fosdem, I assume.
Yeah, I've been there.
Oh, you've been, right, yeah, okay, you know Fosdem. But if you know Brussels is also absolutely horrible for vegetarian or vegan food, generally speaking. It really is. In the past, it was like people said you'd get a bowl of fruit, a veg if you're lucky, or margarita pizza, and that was about it, if you could say vegetarian. And so I went with an ex-girlfriend, basically, as well. That time, 2 years ago, 2020 now. Oh, just before the pandemic, yeah, it started, really hit off. So that was lucky in a way. And we went to a place called the Atomium as well on one of those days, on the Friday, I think. And we had a Friday. Yeah. I don't know if have you been to the Atomium?
I've been there, yeah.
Yeah, so okay, you know what I'm talking about, right. I don't know if Archer 72 or anyone is listening to us right now or will in the future, but either way, for anybody who doesn't know the Atomium, it's basically a massive, tall, high building, which is quite impressive from an engineering point of view, but inside is just a boring museum, basically, and there's also an expensive restaurant on the top, and we wanted to go and eat. So I went, so we were like, oh, we'll get food somewhere. Oh, there's a restaurant, the cafe at the Atomium. And we went up there. And I ordered, and well, she eats a lot because of other reasons anyway, certain reasons anyway. So it was like, we hadn't eaten anyway. And it was like, okay, we're going to have food up here. And we're going for proper food now. We're going for like starter, main course and a dessert plus drinks, right? But I knew the second that waiter came, and it came with a menu on a tablet as well. Well, the top of this Atomium building in the place up there. And you just know it's expensive straight away, like, ooh, the menu's on the tablet as well, ooh. So, she ordered meat, because she eats meat, no problem, right? But I, as a vegetarian, wanted, obviously, vegetarian food. So, I basically said, So I was like to the guy, waiter, like, okay. And I got started with like ravioli or something, vegetarian. It was all right. But then he was telling me about the main course as well. Like he gave me the French term and I was like, okay, I guess I'll have to have that then. And so the starter was okay. But guess what I got as a main course, even in this place? Seriously.
It's just a salad, isn't it?
No, well, I mean, if I go around Brussels to a normal takeaway place, now when I go, if you've got vegetarian, I'll be like, falafel, falafel, falafel everywhere. It's like, okay, falafel, I guess they're not a falafel, I'm not that keen on falafel. But in this Atomium, it was a joke, really, because, you know, I'm in an expensive restaurant, expensive place, tourist place, and all they gave me, seriously, was a bowl, was that saucepan full of vegetables, yeah. Potatoes and stuff. and I thought, like, you know, I'm in an expensive place and all the rest of it. And so the waiter came up to me and went and said, oh, how was your meal? Like they do in places, yeah? This time I just basically told them how it was. I really did. I said, like, look, I've been in Brussels before. I know that Brussels is generally not a particularly good place for vegetarian or veganism. However, saying that, I'm from England now, and in fact, even in England, we've had something called Veganuary recently, and where the company's been embracing veganism food. A lot of the big companies, said something about that as well. And then he's like, okay, sorry, I'll, the dessert was all right. There was like an orange chocolate thing, but he was like, okay, sorry, I'll see what the waiter can, I'll talk to the chef. He was like, I'll talk to our chef. We'll see what we can do, sort of thing. And then we've had our three courses. We've had two drinks as well. And I'm paying as well. And I'm thinking like, oh, geez, this is going to be like 100 euros or something. It really is. The bill came and it was down to about 70. So I was like, why is it down to 70? And he was like, oh, because we can't really take the meals off. Because that's sort of set, but because you were talking about the food not being very good, we've given the drinks free, so that was nice at least. But yeah, right. But and then he said, oh, and I was like, oh, then we're like, we'll improve the menu, and I was like, oh, well, I might come back some other time, but yeah, it was a bit. I don't know. It's just like also. Actually, I went to a speaking group. Well, I went to three one of those years as well with the FOSDEM. Plus, I stuck around for these groups, and one was a Dutch and English group, and I didn't really know any of the Dutch speech except for Blor, yeah. You know, you're Swede as well, so I've said I'm half Swedish, didn't I? You know, blue, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It must be the same in Dutch, I assume. Colour blue, yeah. Didn't know much else of that speech. But there was an Irish speaking club. There was an Irish one, that was nice. And there was also a dinner party, one of the oldest clubs, been there for a long time, and went to a nice restaurant. Before I went, it was like, pick your menu online or whatever with the person. I was like, okay. But what I noticed is it said basically normal and vegetarian, which in a way is a little bit offensive, kind of, to vegetarians, etc. Because, you know, it's really, you know, normal and then vegetarian.
Yes, so I'll have the abnormal meal, please.
I'll have the non-normal meal, right. And France are quite meaty, I think, as well, because I heard a story that apparently I think by law now, actually, they're not allowed to call things like vegan sausage roll, for example, or any meaty terms like they do in the UK. Although it's not meat because it's like a corn product or something.
Yeah.
But they're not, I think in France there was a law now, or more recently, where it was like, you cannot call, you're not allowed to give things a meaty name that are not meat. It's like, really? And the same with that nice posh restaurant for that group. It was a nice place, but the vegetarian was, well, I wasn't impressed at the time. Maybe it wasn't too bad, actually. But I had like a sort of spaghetti type thing as a main course. I had a pudding that wasn't maybe the wrong thing, so I gave it to somebody else. I don't know, it wasn't great, but it was a nice place otherwise. Nice lights and the way the building was, how it was lit up and things. But yeah, Brussels is horrible for vegetarian. Also, I gave in a few years back now at Fosdem, and I went to the hot, one of those hot dog stands, and I ordered chips because I'd stood there too long, and it's smelling of chips or French fries, as some people say instead, right?
Yeah.
Because Sweden can be chips, can mean crisp. We say crisps over here, but you're saying chips and some Europe, but yeah, or French fries to not, yeah. Just in case anyone else hears this as well, to make sense, and you as well. So I'd been there too long, and I wanted some French fries, and I went up and I said, look, okay, I'm vegetarian. And it looked very meaty, this particular food van. I mean, it was. and I said, can I have, I want some French fries. And she's like, okay, yeah. And do you want mayonnaise on that? Because that's what they do in Brussels. So I was like, yeah, okay, I guess I'll have mayonnaise on it. Fine. I mean, that's got egg in it. I'm not vegan. I'm vegetarian, as I was saying. But then the next day, and it might have been related, I'm not sure quite, but I just remember I was feeling a bit funny in my stomach and stuff. So it might be that because I got meat fat on my chips, because some places they really do cook the chips inside with the meat stuff, the oils and stuff. I don't know, but there is actually a vegan stand in Brussels, or more recently, or at times there is, because I've had food from there the last time or the time before, and I hope it will be there again when I possibly get to go back again in 2023, I believe, possibly, depending on the pandemic situation still. I mean, that's what they were thinking at the Fosdem website, because it's a virtual Fosdem next month, February, again, like last year. And then they want to get back in person when they can.
So you're actually sensitive against meat products, because I've been a vegetarian for 16 years, and then sometimes, you know, if the family doesn't eat the leftovers, I will eat it rather than throw it away. Also, from time to time, maybe once in a couple of years, I will give myself a free pass and try some meat as a kind of... Actually, my stomach never had it, but I know that some people...
Oh, you're vegetarian or 99%. Didn't realize that. I thought you weren't, but, I get some sort of stomach issues at times anyway. I don't know what it, summer it is in general. Can get some, just feel a bit off, a bit unwell at times, but I know that some people do, potentially get affected then if they've done vegetarian or vegan long enough and then suddenly they have something meaty or fishy because the body doesn't get on with it then. But I don't know quite. But yeah, some people... I saw the reality check comment. It's a bit like saying, oh, do I really want to be vegetarian, or is, oh, should I do this? Yeah, I don't know. I used to think that vegetarian was, I was a bit unsure, like, you know, like, is it a good or bad thing sort of thing, really? Because especially when most people that you know are eating meat as well around you, etc. But then when I thought things through, I realized that, you know what, ethically, it is better to be a vegetarian or vegan, really. That's my opinion. Because we basically just use animals and too much. And a lot of these animals don't have a particularly nice life when they are alive, and as well. especially yeah. so in more so in certain countries than others, I think, as well. And you know, it's just there's all that side to it as well. Also, I thought, you know what, if I can be a little bit ethical about software, I mean, I'm not a free software activist. I'm not like, you know, like Richard Stallman or one of those people, but obviously I use Linux and I use things and I like to use things that are open source, just like probably everybody who's listening to this this podcast will be as well, because, and we're doing it partly because of ethics, I think, a lot of us, because we know, even as non-programmers, some of us, that the code, that if the code is available, there are lots of advantages to that, and probably ideally all, most software should be available. Maybe not weapons so much and certain things, but general software. And it's like, if you can, I thought years ago also, but like, if I can be ethical about software, then, you know, maybe I should be ethical about something more real as well, actually. And that's the meat, the vegetarian thing, because that is more real. In fact, that's life or death for animals as well. And one debate is that a lot of these animals wouldn't have been born unless they're going to be used by humans for meat or milk or whatever. But I don't know. And then they're working on lab meat apparently now as well a bit, where they can grow it in the lab and then you don't have to have animals being killed. But I did it for ethics and I'm quite happy with my ethics. Although I found out the other month that by mistake I've been eating rennet on occasion. You know what rennet is?
Yeah, from cheese.
Yeah. We've got Dolmio lasagna sauces in the UK. That's a big brand. It's owned under Mars now. Or it was all maybe part of Mars all along. I don't know. But it's like, got nice lasagna sauces. And somehow it must have got overlooked. So the red sauce is vegetarian, no problem. But if you go for a cheesy white sauce or something like that, same with the Lois Grossman brand, I found that recently as well. But anyway, it's got rennet in it, or parmesan, so it's like, oh no.
Yeah.
So I've had lasagnas here and there the last 4 years without realising. And then more recently, because I was looking at online shopping, like, why is that not labelled vegetarian or what that is? And then it was like, kind of all sort of clicked. It was like, let's check that. Oh no, it's got, oh. But it's annoying because I used to be really good at checking labels at the beginning as well. A bit like I've got OCD anyway, obsessive compulsive disorder in some ways, but I really mean on a obsessive kind of basis where at the beginning I would go and check even products, even things I'm buying normally that I know are vegetarian, and I would be still looking on the back of the packet like, have they got the suitable for vegetarians? Because in the UK most products are labeled. Well, we're not going to label fruit and veg as being vegetarian or bottled water properly. Or, I mean, they might do. You might see vegan on some of that saying that. But if for the obvious products like fruit and veg, they're not really going to label it as being vegetarian or vegan, or probably not. But for things that you may be a bit unsure about, most things are labeled. And it's very good like that. In the UK, all the companies pretty much do that. But I know in Sweden, for example, they don't label anything, it seems. I mean, maybe they do a little bit, but I've had Swedish products and it's not labeled. It's a bit like the ballerina Göteborg kex, you know, you must have had those. Yeah. I used to have those growing up. And they're lovely, and there's the Singola or the other one as well, I think. And you get them in IKEA over here. And we've got something called Olcado or Cardo as well, an online supermarket. And there's a bit of a Swedish store on there as well. But they don't have anything labelled as vegetarian. So I'm thinking like, okay, it's a packet of biscuits. That's probably okay. I mean, there's going to be milk in it, but that's fine. But it doesn't tell me bang on. Because, like, the chocolate mousse can have gelatin in it as well, like yogurt thing, and there's these little hidden traps, and you don't always bang on there, and so it's like ballerina kecks. I want those again, but apparently are they vegetarian? I mean, they probably are, but it's not labelled, so it's like just one example.
The Singuala ones will have gelatin, the jam jelly.
Are you sure? Have you found out? I think I googled.
No, I haven't checked. I'm saying it's likely.
What about the ballerina chocolate?
Probably not.
Yeah, so they might, maybe both of them, maybe they're not vegetarian. Yeah, jelly can be gelatin. And it's like Bilar, the sweets, and Shadir Halon, yeah? You remember that?
Yeah, those are all gelatin.
Yeah, they got, exactly, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. They got gelatin. Oh, just in case anybody is going to hear this, or listen to us now, I don't know, but I'm just going to say Bilal is, Svalia's mesh-shaped beel, as they used to say on the packet, and probably still do, Sweden's most bought car. Yeah, that's right. And it's got gelatin in it, because I'm talking about Swedish, sweets, or godis, as you say in Swedish. Yeah, that's a good word, isn't it? Godis.
Yeah.
And mellanmål, my afternoon snack. So yeah, Bilar. And then Chilea Halon is like a cherry, thing, a little bit like Haribo, I suppose, but better than Haribo, really. But unfortunately, it's got gelatin raspberry thing, isn't it? But yeah, it's got gelatin in that as well. Although I think IKEA did have a one without, gelatin input or for something, but like Haribo. But yeah, it's annoying. Gelatin, rennet, even beer. I drink cider usually if I'm going to drink alcohol. I don't tend to drink much alcohol, but I know that you can get like fish Englis or whatever. The Klockerberg had that problem too, where there's something to do with fish or the way it's produced, I think. Have you heard of that before?
What, so fish bugs used for making beer? I never heard of that.
Fish Englis or whatever it's called. It's something to do with fish and the production, I think. I'm not bang on sure what that is myself, but I've heard of this. Yeah, the Klapperberg, the Swedish cider has it apparently, and also Guinness, the Irish beer, has been quite commonly known to have this issue as well, and there's some other ones. So I went to Old Camp in some of the people who listen to this or been to that. But one of the Linux conferences in the UK, and I've done that since 2012 in Fosden, but when it's been on. But the other year we're up in Sheffield, 2018, up in North England, yeah. And I went to this, we're going to this brewery to get some food and stuff, and I remember I went in there and I thought, there's no Thatcher's Gold up here, because I'm up north. We've got something called Thatcher's Gold down here, which is a Somerset cider. Some people don't like it. I've got a friend who goes, oh, it's not nice, or always get it hot, it's not nice. But it's very popular around here. They get in Wales a bit as well, and maybe up in Birmingham just about somewhere. I don't know. But it's the Somerset side. It's around here. And when you go up north, they don't have it. You go to Liverpool, Manchester, Sheffield, and they don't have it. So I was thinking, like, all right, I can't have that because I'm up north. I can have a beer, but I'm trying to do vegetarian properly. I did this in Brussels once as well. I was up having a British beer in Brussels that time because I wasn't bang on sure. I've had Brussels beer before anyway, but I was checking something on Google. I want a vegan beer. What can I have? I can have this, apparently, but that's actually a British make, and it's in Brussels, and it was like, really? Having a British beer in Brussels? That time. But anyway, I was up in Sheffield, and I went into this place, and I said, like, Coke at first, because I looked at I don't know what to drink here. Also, the food menu, it was like, what's vegetarian there? I didn't see anything. So I went up and I said, like, look, I want vegetarian food. And he's like, this and that is vegetarian. So I was like, oh, is it? Okay, I'll have that then. And then I also went up and I said to them, like, Coke at first. And I was like, actually, beer. I was like, oh, actually, I know some of the drinks not vegetarian, I said. So she was like, oh, actually, our brewer's in today, apparently, and they're still lying to me, right? And he's in the back, sort of thing. I was like, okay, is he? And she was like, okay, I'll go and ask our brewer because we make our own beers here, sort of thing. Well, I'll ask our brewer what beer is vegetarian, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I guess, yeah, fine. And then she got back to me a little bit later, and it was like, yeah, this like Hungarian beer or whatever it was, is vegetarian or vegan. So I thought, okay, fine, I'll have that then. I'll have a beer. And then if I got lied to or not, I don't know. But at least from an ethical point of view, I tried to do it properly. I thought, I will have beer, actually, but I want to be sure that it's okay. And it's those little things that most people don't even know about or even think about, because especially if they're not vegetarian. But if you're doing it properly, you know, you start to know about, find out about those little traps, those little things that might go against your ethics. Even with the COVID vaccine, even with the COVID vaccines, I rejected the AstraZeneca, the UK one originally, because there's something about clone fetus cells. I mean, I read this on the Oxford University website. I even checked with a pharmacist on the phone. There's something about how it's been made, and I think it's something that I wasn't happy about, stem cell research possibly. I'm not sure if I want this quite. Became an issue with my family then, because I was supposed to be getting dropped off by someone and getting vaccinated, and they got the wrong, they thought I was totally anti-vaccine, and I was like, no, I just don't want this particular vaccine, and no one understood where I was coming from. And then I got a Pfizer one done later anyway, and I've had three of those now. Although that's not perfect from an ethical point of view either, because it's still tested on animals, I believe, and the Moderna and all of them, I think, by law, I believe, as well. Somebody died who was vegan because he didn't take the vaccine. I read an article. He was an animal lover. He was in his 50s somewhere. So it's kind of hard with ethics as well. Sometimes you have to sort of draw the lines. Sometimes I think, and go like, how far do I want to go with this or not?
I try not to sweat small stuff.
You try not to what?
I don't sweat small stuff. I figure I eat so many fewer steaks than most people. I'm pretty much clear. If I have a little chili halon once in a while, I don't really feel bad about that. All of these little things like sugar, you can get sugar that is generally bleached in bone meal. You know, get the vegan sugar, you should buy kosher, for example. And there's all of these little things, and I'm aware of some of them. And I mean, if the choice is easy, like I can take this product or that, of course I'll take the ethically better one, but I don't dive into deeply. I have so many things I'm obsessed with.
What else are you obsessed about?
Well, you know, I'm making my life difficult by trying to just use free software. That's the other thing. And, you know, it's a bunch of stuff like this, and it all adds up. And it's difficult enough to make life work and ends meet that I don't
hang on.
Want to.
Yeah, but hang on a minute. You talked about banking apps earlier.
Mental overload in my daily life.
Talked about banking apps earlier, but the thing is, they're not going to be free software, are they?
Yeah, for example. So if there were a free software alternative, I would use it. But if I feel like I need a banking app, I'm going to tolerate that.
So you're not quite the FSF guys, where that some of them really are, you know, they really are like, right, I'm going to, well, Richard Stallman, I mean, there was the whole thing about he wouldn't go on websites normally. We talked about that last night, actually.
Yeah.
Were you there when I said about that? I can't remember.
That's when I was around, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously the Libra Planet a few years back, their conference, apparently people then gasped and then they applauded, because he's going on websites normally. But some of the people, I mean, like, you go to FOSDEM or somewhere, and the Cool Boot stand is there, for example. Cool Boot, do you like free software BIOS, you know, and it's like, I've got some stickers and things from there before, but and it's like, great, yeah, this is that's great. Great project in a way, because you've got a free software BIOS. But then it's like, hang on a minute, who actually uses this? What laptops support it? Because, you know, if the BIOS goes wrong enough, you're gonna, well, it's not quite reflashing a phone, is it? With some alternative operating system. We're talking about a BIOS of a computer. And if that goes wrong enough, then the whole thing isn't gonna work, I guess. It really isn't. And it's going to be harder to probably reflash a BIOS anyway, but if you can do it on a machine. But, you know, some of them insist on that. They go, no, the BIOS is not It's still proprietary software in my machine, and so I must have something like Coolboot instead, or I got proprietary software and I'm not happy. And and there was a the Star Labs thing I was looking at. I think the option is Coolboot or the other one, I think, as well, or normal BIOS. If I buy that laptop, I probably will pick Coolboot actually, because I'll have a free software BIOS then. And why not? And if it's pre-installed and works, I guess even that's okay then. But, or there's another option as well. You can try on your own computer and put a free software BIOS on, but I think on certain computers, but that's probably going a bit far. If it goes wrong, your whole computer is not going to work, is it?
Yeah, that's a pretty sensitive point of failure.
It's probably the sort of thing, leave it alone for the most part. I mean, maybe the BIOS update via the official software. But with the exception of that, it pretty much just leave it alone. And you can change the settings, but I'm talking about upgrading it or changing it something else. It's a bit, it's a bit far, maybe.
Yeah, again, I think it comes down to all things in moderation. You got to choose, you want to push the envelope forward, but you also need to consider how much margin you have in your life for digging down into.
Yeah, and it's, but yeah, it's like that. But where do I draw the line? Same with veganism. I went to a meal. Well, I've been to a few of those in the past, really. But there was one about 6-7 years ago, maybe. One of the first ones I went to, I think, in the city, like a group of vegans and veggies, and it's an online group thing or meetup thing, but meetup group, if you know what meetup is. Went to one of those meals, and I remember we were sitting there in some cafe or restaurant with a few of them, and women, bit guys, and there was one guy talking to him and so on, and eventually slipped out that he was not really vegetarian or vegan. He was what we call pescatarian in this country, where you still eat fish at times, basically. And he was then talking about where you draw the line a bit as well, like, for example, if you're doing farming, a worm might die or something, or you is that bad then? And things like that, and it's true, you have to sort of, like I was saying, you have to draw the line with those ethics, and also probably any other ethics, really. Or it's a bit like Richard Stallman, where I think he would use a microwave where it's running proprietary software. And he would probably go on a plane that's running proprietary software as he's been flying around the world through speeches. But I think it says somewhere like, you can't control that at all, so it's okay. Or there was an article, something that said it before, but it's like, where do you draw the line with anything like this, isn't it?
Yeah, so Richard Stallman has a pretty clear line when it comes to firmware. For if the manufacturer can provide a driver that upgrades the firmware, or if the firmware is in flash or in RAM that is initialized every boot, then he thinks that it's not ethical if you don't have the source. But if the firmware is in ROM and there's no way you can upgrade it in normal circumstances, you would have to go in and actually rip out the chip and put in a new one. In that case, he thinks it's okay that the ROM is a fixed thing I can't modify anyway, so then it's okay.
Well, if you can't edit if it's on the ROM and you really can't do anything with it, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Or a bit like a microwave, it's got something in the background, you probably can't really get access to the microwave enough to then change the software on the microwave.
Yeah, exactly.
And this won't be internet connected and things. I think well, I don't know. Well, actually, I got a new washing machine recently, and that's got some smart features. Like, I can get down on my own wash cycle if I want. My friend, tech friend, had one too. Some devices are getting connected that wouldn't have been before. Getting some smart features.
Yeah. So in that case, if you can connect it to the internet and you can download new wash cycles, according to Richard Stallman, it's unethical if you don't have the ability to provide your own wash cycle, modify whatever wash cycles are there for.
Well, it's probably going to be unethical in that sense because to do it, I have to also use their app, the manufacturer's app, which I believe is going to be proprietary software, surely. So, for a start, so there you go.
Yeah, and then it's even worse. And the whole idea that your washing machine should be connected to the internet is kind of iffy.
Or it can be like Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. I think it's Bluetooth or something. But it can be connected. So
I don't know. For the last 30 years, I've never felt like, oh, I wish I had a different wash cycle. So I don't see that this is a very important feature that would require a device to have internet access. It's like they're just piling on things. Like, how can we get an excuse to connect for the cloud?
Well, the faults aren't bang on perfect on that washing machine. They're not too bad. I do actually think that maybe I should have a look actually and see if there is something a little bit more suitable for my knees. But on the other hand, I can get by with what's come by default. So it's a bit of a, yeah.
Yeah, choose the temperature and should it tumble or not? That's pretty much.
Yeah. I think got short bowl. Somebody's turned up in the channel or possibly and here, but which is good. But what I was gonna say as well is we had this word list we were going through, or you were, and then I said when we got into plant based, and then we got into a big chat here. But what other words were on that list?
So just a round of plant-based thing, I think that, I've been a vegetarian for the last 16 years, and the first time I moved to Hong Kong was 10 years ago, and at that point it was very difficult to find good vegetarian food. And these days it's much easier, and I think that plant-based showing up in the official word list is a sign that vegetarianism is more accepted and more mainstream, and I think that all of these new experiments with Beyond Meat and Omnipork and whatever meat substitutes there are, I think
it's good.
And it's people who are not kind of willing to invest in learning a specific vegetarian diet. It's good that these sort of plug-in substitutes for meat exist so that people can get the recipe and just continue but doing things a little bit better.
I remember with Oomph, actually, the Swedish thing, because we were going back, 2015, was it? Got stopped at a garage near the airport. And went to the vegetarian section. There was like an Oomph sandwich. I never ever had Oomph before, so I got this sandwich. We bought the sandwich. I was with my mum. Anyway, whatever, she ate it, no problem. She eats meat anyway. But I got it, and it just seemed too meaty to me. It really did. It was like, is this meat? Is this not meat? Is this? And I started to Google, and I couldn't quite get my answers. And then I just didn't eat it properly, and it put me off it. And then it was a bit annoying because I wish it was. Yeah. And then I found out afterwards. And there's a guy who moved to Finland from used to be in my he's on the mailing list still, I suppose, my Linux user group, and I'd met him before. He lives in Finland now. He's an English guy, but I remember him telling me on Facebook or somewhere about a year or two ago or whatever that was. Oomph is supposed to be, the texture is supposed to be very meat-like. However, it is vegetarian or vegan, yeah. But the whole point is it's supposed to be very meat-like. So the sandwich just seemed too meaty at the time. And I had something the other day from an Indian takeaway locally as well. And on the menu there, it just said chicken curry or chicken something. And then it's like, okay, it's probably tofu. But I don't know, just, even though I knew it was probably tofu in there, really, I just got a bit put off that time. Like, oh, I can't eat this now, which is a little bit annoying when things like that happen. I got a vegan sausage roll years ago from a bakery that was there, and I actually had to come back that time. I was nearby. I went back and I said, like, I just want to just double check this is like vegetarian because it's so meat-like. And sometimes you want meat-like and that's fine, and especially if you know that it's not meat, but other times you can sort of start to question it because it's too meat-like. And that's kind of what happened here, I think. But yeah, corn is good. Some people are allergic and stuff, but most people are fine. Beyond Meat is the American thing that's come to UK as well. McDonald's has got a Beyond Meat burger recently. They had a vegetarian burger and a veggie wrap anyway before, and the dipper things. But they got an actual vegan burger with Beyond Meat now, very recently, which tastes like a beef burger, I suppose. And there's some of the demand is, sorry, I'll say that again in a minute, but couldn't hear you. But some of the stuff is very meat-like and it's supposed to be, and that's fine, that's good, and that's catering for that kind of, we want something that's like meat, but it's not meat, but you might question it. And some people go, why do you want all this fake meat stuff? Because you can just have real vegetarian food. But what were you going to say? You were saying something.
Yeah, there's Beyond Meat and... As I mentioned, Omnipork, I think that's a Hong Kong thing. It's not very nice, actually. It's kind of like spam. But that's a thing. Or like luncheon meat. And then there's also Impossible Meat, which is very similar to meat.
Yeah. And then there's, the veganist, the modern vegan, well, some people think that a lot of the modern vegans just want meat like that. That's something that really looks and tastes like meat otherwise, and that's not completely true, but yeah, it's good to have, I think, these meat alternatives, and it's good to have actual proper, just standard, classic, old-fashioned vegetarian food or vegan food as well, which is the other thing, actually. I said vegan or vegetarian because that's, I'm going to say something else now, actually, because what can happen as well now is this kind of thing. It's like, you mentioned the word hipster earlier. So if you're vegan, you're like cool and hipster, basically. But if you are vegetarian, you're not quite cool enough in this context, or pescatarian or any of that. And if you're an omnivore in this context, then you're definitely not cool because, yeah, if you just go and eat meat. It's a bit like... But I can compare it to software, what I'm trying to say, kind of, and you'll probably get my gist. It's a bit like if you run a Mac, you're going to be hipster. If you run Linux, you're kind of going to be in between. And if you run Windows, you're not cool at all. Yeah, see what I'm saying? It's like a craze. It's like, it's like the big thing. A lot of things says vegan, vegan, vegan. And it's like, what about vegetarian? Why are you not saying vegetarian anymore? It's like vegan is like the craze now, to some extent, the cool thing to do.
Yeah, so I think that's good and bad. And there's definitely this, like people ask you, so are you vegetarian for dietary reasons or for ethical reasons? And I will say, but I guess these days you might as well say that someone is vegetarian for fashionable reasons.
Yeah, some are doing it because, oh, it's cool to be vegan, is it? I've done vegetarian for ethics, so I haven't gone all the way, vegan's can be a bit difficult anyway, because, if you're vegan, you have to either, if you're vegan, you have to either do a lot of your own cooking to save money and to eat the right stuff, really, or, unfortunately, you have to pay that bit extra for a lot of vegan products still. And vegetarian, vegan. The same with like, it shouldn't really be like this. The same with like gluten issues. People may have to pay that little bit more because they got gluten issues. Or my mum's boyfriend, he's got diabetes. And he was saying the other day how he has to, he's done this for lots of years. He has to pay that little bit extra for some of the stuff because he's diabetic, you know, and it's like, it's a bit like that's not really how it should be, although it's probably based on demand as well. And obviously meat is still the big seller because a lot of these discount shops, there were two guys earlier who mentioned Lidl, who were on earlier, might have heard some of that, I don't know. Lidl is in... Lidl is a German company, and there's Aldi, German as well. And they're around in Europe, and you've got Aldi in America, I think, as well. I've seen that somewhere. But they are discount shops, and when I go into a Lidl or an Aldi, well, yeah, it's the place with cheap meat, like somebody else said to me, he's probably right, really. I mean, you can get some of the vegetarian vegan products as well that are okay, but it's sort of a meat shop, more so probably really. And then you get your basic vegetables and things, and you get a meat corner in these shops as well, like a lot of shops really. Like, ooh, meat's the meat section. Let's go past here. And then it's got shops like Iceland as well in the UK, which is a Welsh company. I think it's only a UK company, but they also sell mostly frozen food, and it's meat, of course. And there's something called Farm Food, which is a bit small, Scottish, and a bit similar to that. But I think meat is the big seller and chicken can be really cheap as well. Chicken can be really, really cheap now. And it's in a way it shouldn't be like that. I think meat should be more expensive because for various reasons, because of the way the animals were treated, that's one thing, but also just generally animals have to be brought up with food and they take up space and all that kind of stuff as well. So yeah, meat probably should be more expensive. Centuries ago, it was like a luxury in the UK, in England and yeah. stuff. If you can afford meat or meat constantly, you got money. You're rich basically. And if you're poor, you can only have it on occasion, possibly.
Yeah, that's why there's so much meat for Christmas, because it was like the time of the year where one would give themselves the pleasure.
I got onto I was googling about, you know, vegan ethics or vegetarian ethics or whatever. It was passed me into Google the other night or last week or something. And there's an article about this basically, how people then justify. I don't know if anyone else is going to actually hear this ever, but they might do. And if you are a meat eater, then yeah, listen to this, right? So they justify eating meat. Well, one article was talking about, I think a guy did eat meat really, but it was just talking about how people kind of justify it. So for example, Christmas or in America, Thanksgiving, and it's like, well, we have turkeys at Thanksgiving and we have turkeys at Christmas, and pretty much everybody eats turkey, or nearly everybody, at that time of year, because that's what people do. And so it's okay. And so they eat meat. Because everybody else is doing it pretty much, and it's seen as part of society and part of what people do. And that's one way to do it, and then people don't feel bad or guilty because because everyone else has done it pretty much. And also the way they can package and label stuff and do food packaging to make it sound good. It doesn't say like, dead animal, for example, on a product packaging. It will say you're eating ham or something. which is part of it as well. And then there's people who love animals otherwise, and they got pets or they're doing animal courses or whatever they're doing, but come food time, they go and eat meat, which is a bit of a, really?
Yeah. Yeah, English is particular in that way, that when an animal is alive, it's a Germanic word, but when you eat it, it's a Latin word, so it sounds fancier.
Well, yeah, from its wording. If it said, like, this is the guts of a cow or something, basically, and it said that on the packaging, I mean, mince looks pretty disgusting anyway, I find personally. But, you know, mince, beef mince or whatever, oh, it really is. I always found that, even before I was vegetarian or whatever, I always thought, ooh. But, you know, if it said, like, you're eating the insides of cows here or something on the packaging, you'd probably be put off even more, potentially, even though you know it's true. You know what I mean?
People are more likely to eat a beef than they would be to eat a mangled cow.
What they also do is that, I think in some of the Asian countries, I think maybe Hong Kong as well, or Japan as well, I believe you can go into a restaurant and say, like, look, I want a fish, or I want a lobster. and you see it there in the tank alive, and then...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You can't do that in the UK now. I think they've stopped doing that, or maybe they could at one stage. I'm not sure quite. But I know in, I think some of the Asian countries can still do it. You can go into a restaurant. You've got a nice aquarium or something, and you go, look, I want a lobster. I want to eat a lobster. I want to eat a fish. I want to eat whatever. And they go, okay. And then they take it out of the aquarium, and then they kill it, basically. And then you have that. But that's the other thing. Here, it's like, you just go into a shop, you buy meat, you have no attachment to that animal, because you've never seen it alive. You see it as a food product, and that's part of the debate. And if people had to kill those animals themselves as well, I have a feeling there'd be more vegetarians, to be honest. Because,
yeah, so
you know,
I think that's great in Hong Kong. So in like Western countries, you would say that all the kids don't even know, they think that meat comes from a... If you go to Hong Kong to traditional restaurants, there's no way you're eating meat and you don't know that someone, because when you enter the restaurant, there will be like pig's heads and there will be birds hanging upside down just at the entrance. And like you said, if you go to a seafood restaurant, the seafood is alive and you point at it and you get that individual served. So I think that's good. I think that's upfront and honest. And when you're eating meat, you really know what you're doing. As you say, I hope that helps people to some extent. What they're doing. And I don't know. On the other hand, maybe it means like you're more aware of what you're doing, so you're not shocked when you find out.
Well, it's not very nice when they're going to do it that way. But on the other hand, the argument I'm having is that actually that could be a good thing, because it really shows people, look, you want to eat meat, okay, you can. However, it's going to be this is what you're eating, which is what you were saying as well. The only thing is how they kill the animals as well, because I know in like Muslim traditions or whatever, they got halal meat, where it's called, yeah, but I know that that's not very nice really, how they do that, from what I know about it, that and yeah, not very nice at all, really. Ooh, horrible.
Yeah, you can't give them anesthetics or knock them out, just drain their blood while they're awake.
Yes, it's just I don't know. We've seen that as horrible, a lot of us here in these kind of countries, but there are people who think the opposite, of course. But or we say the way that we do it is more humane or better, but. Yeah, I don't know. You can probably debate both ways of doing it, but it just doesn't sound very nice to me, no.
The original argument for halal meat is quite similar to what we just said, that when you kill the animal, you need to look it in the eyes and you need to read it a prayer and sort of apologize for killing it. And the idea is this is supposed to keep you from getting desensitized and to minimize the suffering you're causing. But I think history shows that this didn't quite pan out, that we're still, even in halal slaughter, it's still done full scale.
Yeah, but if it's bleeding, if it's live bleeding in pain and stuff, that's the problem, I think, that we're kind of saying, well, I was, that that's just horrible, basically. Yeah, yeah, it's going to die, but that's not the point. it's there in pain until it dies, and that's just horrible. I think that's what a lot of people do think, except for like the people who, like I said, Muslims or whatever. But I don't know. But I do think the idea of that. Yeah, you want meat. You can have meat, but you're gonna really see this alive first. It could help stop people eating so much meat, because that's people eat for taste and stuff, and people are not attached, but they won't eat their pets. You know, they have dogs and cats, not gonna, and stuff, and they got the attachment there. But then come to farm animals, it's like, oh, it's all right. Oh, we can do that. Is it? Then you got debates around, you know, protein and if we need to have animal flesh or not, and if it's a good idea and all that. But that's another argument. But Well, actually, that's an argument right there. Do we have enough protein if, as vegetarians? Do we get enough this and that? Or are we lacking something? Are we going to get Alzheimer's and dementia when we get old, possibly, because we've been eating vegetarian food for so long? Was it because of fish that people got clever and the brains got bigger? Because in the past, there was a lot of fish eating. And I don't know. There's all that kind of side to things, too, all these food debates. But what we try and do as vegetarians, although you did say you eat meat on occasion, so although you said you weren't completely, well, you found a way to justify that, I think, and you said only on occasion, but I think we're trying to do generally what's the least hurtful thing, by being vegetarian or vegan or pretty much in this example, but we're not perfect. I mean, we might do other things, plastic waste, insects might die or something, and I don't know, but I think generally the idea of vegetarian is to try and do the thing that is less hurtful to animals or the planet, possibly, for when it goes beyond just food.
Yeah, I think if you assume that eating meat is bad, and then you go out and you don't eat meat 364 days of the year, I think you're still doing a better job than most people, so I don't think there's any.
Oh no, I don't eat meat at all now. I really don't. I had fish at the beginning. No,
I mean the impersonal you, not you.
Well, just people in general, and there's flexitarians as well, where they are trying. They're called, that's a good word actually. That should be in a dictionary now somewhere. Where they are basically vegetarian, or they could be vegetarian maybe all 5 days of the week, Monday to Friday, for example, but then on the weekend they eat meat a little bit because they've gone out or something, or something like that. So they're trying to cut back on their meat eating. And then Burger King did like a flexitarian burger where it was basically all vegan ingredients, but it was still cooked with the meat. So it was like, But then more recently got an actual vegan burger that seems to be okay. I had that last month. But first time for Burger King for a long time. But I think ethics. And then you said software, trying to be free. Have you got any other ethics as well? All sort of thing?
I probably do, but not off the...
No.
Those are the two big ones.
Yeah, plastic waste, throw a lot out, but try and reduce, oh, I don't know, it's hard with the companies producing that. We had that chat earlier or whatever, but I'm going to go back to that word list I'm quite curious about that word list. So what else is on there?
Yeah, so if we go from the beginning, the first one is Aivar, so AJVAR. Do you know that one?
It's what, say that again?
Aivar, AJVAR. It's actually, it's a spice.
Oh, not virtual reality. Age VR. Virtual reality for old people, maybe. I don't know. A spice.
Yeah, so that's been around forever, and apparently it's just recently become prominent enough that it's earned a place in the list. A feel good as a prefix, like people will say a feel good movie. So in Swedish, that would be an feel good film.
Feel good, like in a movie context, like this was a nice movie, I feel good watching this.
Yeah, it's something that is just like, yeah, this just makes you happy and upbeat, and I guess people...
Well, in Swedish, feel good in Swedish as well.
So maybe if you make a dinner where you make it to indulge yourself, maybe you could say, oh, ikväll ska jag ha en feel good middag.
Oh yeah, feel good, I feel good after having this food.
Yeah, it's something you indulge in, something that just makes you happy.
I'm not sure if that's really a proper word, but I can sort of see what you're saying. I feel good, I watched this movie. I feel good, I had this beer. I feel good, I ate that dessert sort of thing. I feel good after Mel'amour. I love that. That's a good word, like I said earlier.
Yeah, so it's something that, a prefix that people use in a composite word to categorize something as, this is the type of thing within this is purely for treating yourself.
Yeah, no, that's okay, I understand. What else is on the list?
Endometriosis, and that's also been around forever, but it's been very marginalized. So endometriosis, if you don't know, or if someone listening, endometriosis is something that women may suffer from, where stuff that is supposed to be inside your uterus ends up outside the uterus. The main point is this is causing some women a lot of pain. And for a long time, the male doctors they've been going to have been saying like, yeah, just take some pills and come back, it'll probably pass, and not being taken seriously. And actually, I have a friend who is a science communicator and also suffers from, and so she's been suffering and in pain for a decade. And she's campaigning a lot for this and raising awareness. And endometriosis being on the list of newly recognized words shows that apparently awareness is rising of this and people are starting to take it serious. Actually treating the patients instead of just telling them to take painkillers and bear with it.
Right, okay, medical terms, or a newer one, or the better it in. Medical terms. Also, I was just thinking, I've got a list of, like, phobias that I was given as a public speaking group thing, table topics. Some of the words on there as well, like, whoa, are these real words? And it's like, yeah, these are real phobias. But yeah, I mean, medical terms and things like that, when you think about it, oh, geez, yeah, there's so many different things. And it's like, wow. And where does some of these words come from? How do they come up with that? And there's loads of things we won't even know. Everyone won't know. Like, if you hear it, you might hear it somewhere. Oh, you've got this condition, you've got that condition, you've got this, you've got that. Because people want a name for everything, basically, as well. That's the other thing.
The next word on the list is fentanyl, for some reason. That's an opioid, a painkiller. I guess people are using it more, or maybe people are more aware of the problems of using opioids. I don't really know.
A painkiller, okay, yeah.
Funktionsvariation, functional variation. So I guess this is considerate and compassionate language for people would otherwise call a disability. This shows that...
Say that again?
Taking more...
Say that again?
Functional variation. So I guess this is what...
Oh, I see. Yeah. Variation in functionality, what you can do in things.
Yeah. Gaddase. I think this means getting a tattoo, but it's a hip term, like... getting a sting. So apparently people are getting more tattoos these days.
Tattoos. I mean, I don't really like tattoos. I mean, well, some people have some quite interesting tattoos in a way, but I'm not really into tattoos. although as a kid, you could get those fake, maybe you could probably still can somewhere, those little fake stamp tattoos that you could put on your arm for a bit, would wash off eventually, but those were a bit of fun at times, actually. Those little fake tattoos.
Yeah, we had those.
Things.
We went to a Halloween party.
Yeah.
And they would offer you these water sticker tattoos with, like, you could have a ghost on you or something.
Yeah, exactly. A ghost or a... Yeah, that's been years. That's been many years.
Miljörätt, so that's environmental law. I guess people have had a lot of discussions. I think there was something happening on Gotland where there was a controversy. Some company that got the right to mine and types of rock there where they shouldn't have. But apparently people have been discussing legal instruments.
Greta Thunberg was there, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, she's Swedish. She's also got autism or Asperger's, it said. Somewhere, but what she's doing is quite impressive, really, in certain ways, I guess.
Yeah, she's an Aspie and she's open about it, and she considers it her super that this is what has allowed her to have the intensity has.
Richard Stallman has a bit as well, I've read in the book or something,
yeah,
which probably isn't surprising, to be fair, because what he's done and speeches and all the rest of it. But yeah, no, it's good what he's done as well.
So then we have probiotic, which has also been around forever, but the probiotic product fashionable these days, so that's on the list now.
Yeah, it's like yogurts and things, isn't it?
Skalbagg. This is... we talked about this in the 80s in the Boy Scouts. So layered clothing. instead of having a down jacket, your proper sweat-absorbing thin shirt, and then you have a thick sweater for for insulation, and then you have a windproof jacket to seal it all in, and then you can easily scale up and scale down depending on the circumstances, rather than having this big warm thing that is supposed to do all this at once.
What was that called? Skull something?
Skull plug, so layered clothing.
Oh, right, yeah.
I don't know why people would be talking about that in 2021. I thought people were staying indoors.
Not in Sweden. You didn't get a lockdown. Well, you've been in Hong Kong, but Sweden didn't get a lockdown. They've been out and about, and they've been going to summer cottages, and they've been... I mean, to be fair, in Sweden, you know, you pretty much can be social distanced at your summer cottage anyway.
Yeah, no, but I mean...
The next neighbour is about a mile away.
Sweden hasn't had the hard lockdowns, but...
The next neighbour is about a mile away in some of those cottages.
A lot more people have been working from home. Like the IT people I know, they're 100% years. So people have definitely been out less. So I'm still surprised that discussions of how to dress properly for cold weather...
Yeah.
Stabslager. That means... what do you call it? Staff situation is the direct translation, but stab means like high level staff, like the highest generals in the, or something like. And Stabslager is used for a high alert situation, all man on deck kind of situation. I guess there have been several political crises through the last year, but this is also a word that's it's been around forever. It's become prominent enough this year to be honest.
So like a management word, was it or something?
Yeah. So it's semi-bureaucratic Swedish Stabslager, all hands on deck situation.
I see. Yeah, no, yeah, it's one of those words, I guess.
Vestibulit. I don't know. Medical term, I guess.
Say that again.
Vestibulit. Vestibulite. I guess this is some growth in some part of your body that you want to have there. I don't...
Vest. Well, it's not. Well, vest is a vest. That's clothing, but
no, yeah. Vestibule. That means some kind of like a lobby or an entrance, and I think it's used as a medical term for parts of your.
I don't know. We'll just skip this one, I guess. Next one.
Yeah, I don't really know. Vuxenleksak, adult toy. I leave the interpretation up to you.
No, I leave the interpretation up to you. Next one.
I'm guessing this is either sex toys or maybe it's just about, you know, people consuming too many gadgets. My association, it is adult.
Mr. Gadget.
So I guess...
there was a cartoon of it, was it? Mr. Gadget Detective, or some old cartoon. But yeah, gadgets, yeah. We like our tech Linux gadgets.
Boys with...
Or some people like cars a lot. I know one. Actually, I know one guy, but he had an accident with one of his fancy car that he got from South Korea as well. Working on it, he forgot the clutch wasn't on, and it ended up breaking his arm. Yeah, like had operations. But cars or tech gadgets or we like our gadgets. We like our There was an article about shiny gadgets. Like Linux users want shiny gadgets. It was like 3 years ago because we're about Ubuntu Touch and things, I think. Like it says, just because we use Linux, it's not that Apple get their fancy shiny gadgets, but Apple users, but we want some fancy Linux gadgets too, really. Devices and stuff. Oh, at times we do, an Ubuntu tablet, a Sailfish OS tablet, I didn't get that, some sort of phone or something else. A mini PC or something, you know, we want our fancy Linux gadgets too at times, really.
Oh, yeah. So if I'm to guess why Vuxenleksak ended up on the word list, I would speculate that maybe if people are working more from home, maybe they have... That's the end of the word list.
Is it? Oh. Shall I get a list? I think it's over there. List of phobias, of course, given this. That might be fun. Because I'm going to translate it wrong, and you're going to guess what the phobia means. Maybe that will work, because I've got the actual meaning on the other side of what these things actually are. Right. And you seem to be good at this, so you knew all those words. So let's try. Maybe we should try this, just because I've got the list right over there. I believe I think it's right there, isn't it? Yeah, that must be it. In a speaking group, what we did is we would give people a table topic, and they would get to basically make this up and speak about it for 2 minutes at most about what that thing is. But I don't know, it's try something. It might be fun. And I wonder if anybody else will actually turn up on this again. Well, they might do at some stage, but I don't know. They've got like 26 hours already of plus us so far. Oh, hang on. Oh, Cook's only connected there. Are they going into the I don't know, the route. We've got, so somebody turned up. I'm gonna get this word list because it's right there. Let's see what we can do with that. Might be better fun. It just means I have to stand up briefly, but that's alright.
We can do a few of these. It sounds like, I don't know if it's lunch or dinner. It's getting ready, so.
No, I mean, that's fine if you got to drop off in a bit as well. But, let's see if this is going to work. Yeah. I don't know. Ostraconophobia. What do you think that might be? Don't Google any of this, by the way, because you could cheat.
I'm not cheating.
Ostraconophobia. What do you think that might be?
Ostraconophobia. I was thinking ostracism, thing with that. I guess there's a C there, but so maybe it's the is it the fear of being singled out? Or?
So it is a fear. You got that correct. Well, I suppose they're all fears, actually. Just looking at this list, fear of selfish. That one apparently.
Oh, I didn't expect
it
at all.
Yeah, stuff like this. It's like weird phobias that, like, really? People have got this, have they? Aulophobia. A-A-U-L-O phobia.
A-A-U-L-O.
Yeah.
Fear of loofah sponges.
Ah, we've got Rebel back. Hey.
Hello.
So, hey. What, don't cheat Rebel either, but that was wrong, by the way. A-U-L-O-phobia.
How to derive
fear of flutes, actually, this one.
I would never have guessed.
Yeah. Hylophobia.
Fear of elevators.
H-I-L-O.
Hylo, probably was easy to make them up and make her do a speech for 2 minutes, but we try and this anyway. Hylophobia, fear of trees, apparently.
Well, not philophobia then?
H-Y-L-O, that's right. Right.
Just the H, not a P-H.
No, H-Y-L-O phobia.
Huh.
And this one, I've got another one. You might get this, or you might not. As a Swede for Clacky, and Verbal might figure it out as well. Let's see what happens. Papaphobia.
Fear of elephants.
No. Papa, P-A-P-A. Papaphobia.
Fear of butterflies.
It's either fear of your dad or it's fear of the...
Say that again, Clacky.
It's either fear of your own dad or it's fear of the Pope.
Bingo, you've got it. So it's not fear of your dad, but I was thinking as a Swede you might think that because Papa is a dad, yeah? Papa, I mean Papa, my dad. But yeah, fear of the Pope. You've got that one. You got it. Let's see, well, I mean, there's a lot on this list, like 46. But let's see what else I can go for. Why not? Chirophobia. C-H-I-R-O phobia.
Fear of chiropractors.
No, but that sounds like a good guess. I like the sound. I mean, it was wrong, but that sounded like a good guess. I'm not sure if anyone will get this, to be fair. Fear of hands, apparently.
Oh.
And then here's this one you might be able to guess.
The chirality of a molecule if it's left.
You might guess this one, though. Someone might do here. There's two of you now, that's good. Globophobia. G-L-O-B-O phobia. Globo.
Fear.
Globo. Global. Globo.
Fear of hemoglobin.
No, well, I'll give a hint. It is quite basic what you would be saying as a guess, and that would be correct if that makes any help.
Fear of spherical things, sphere fear.
Nope. Although globo sound, yeah, it could be a spirit, but no. I guess, or kind of.
So this is fear of the world?
Globe. No, it's too easy. No, it's fear of balloons, it says here.
All right.
And this one, I don't know, let's try this. Churophobia. And I'll give a hint. It might be too difficult otherwise. So the hint is, when I'm talking food now, is a fear of a particular type of food, right? But which food are we talking about? And it's quite a common food, actually. That's two hints. T-U-R-O-phobia. That's the one I'm just giving two hints for as well. Because I don't think anyone's going to guess it otherwise. Churophobia, however it's called. T-U-R-O. Phobia. So it's a common food. It's a fear of that. And it is... Yeah, well, yeah, it's that.
Fear of fried foods.
Not as quite as complicated. I don't need detail. Just a specific food. The name of that food. Should I make it even easier? Make it even easier. It's a dairy product, but that could be make it too easy.
Fear of cheese.
Bingo, yeah. Fear of cheese. Churophobia. Fear of cheese, it says here. And then I've got one here. I might be saying some of this wrong, of course, but that's part of the thing. spelling them now anyway. Pentaphobia. P-E-N-T-H-E-R-A phobia. What's that?
Fear of paint.
No, but I like it. I like the sound of that as a guess.
Could you spell it again? Penthrero.
Yeah, P-E-N-T-H-E-R-A-P. P-E-N-T-H-E-R-A, and then phobia. Yeah.
Fear of five-sided objects.
Well, I don't know where he's come from this idea, but I like the sound of that. How it is wrong.
Fear of snakes.
Try and give somebody a hint. Clacky, have you got a wife?
I do.
Right, that's your hint, okay? That's a bit vague as a hint, but it might help you. That's Rebel's hint now as well, because he heard me, I'm sure.
Fear of makeup.
No, the hint is, I said wife is a hint, very vague hint, but it might help to guess this one. So... Something to do with having a wife. You have to have a wife. That's, yeah, for this to be of any use, because I can't have this. I don't have a wife. And so.
Fear of separation?
Nope. And I'll give you another hint. There's lots of jokes about this particular thing that it's sort of referring to.
Fear of the mother-in-law.
Bingo. Yeah. Fear of mother-in-laws. Phobia, D-E-I-P-N-O phobia.
Fear of gods.
No. I'll give a hint, I suppose. It's to do with food, this one, as well. Or in a general sort of context. Not the actual food you're eating, but otherwise. D-E-I-P-N-O phobia.
Fear of choking.
No, but that sounds like a good guess.
I'm thinking like this sounds fear of hibernation.
No, so it's to do with foods, not the food you're eating, but food in a general sort of context. And I'll give another hint in a sort of nice way where you refer to this as you're doing this. By looks of it, I don't know. Maybe it's too difficult. Fear of dining, I believe this one. Although this next one, I think somebody should be able to guess. Hopefully, decidophobia.
Fear of trees.
Fear of making decisions, exactly. And then I've got, I don't know if this is too difficult, also to do with, well, actually, this is one, the next one's to do with spices, all kind of food spices, yeah. Allium phobia? A-I-U-M phobia. Anyone know what that is? Take a guess.
Fear that you're going to be...
A-L-L-I-U-M phobia.
Fear that you're going to be poisoned by aluminium.
Poisoned by what?
Normal.
Wait, can you still hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, no, it's not. Oh, I think I've got the button down a lot and it's going to stay a bit stuck now, but never mind. As long as I can be heard still, that's perfect. What would the verbal say?
Fear that you're going to be poisoned by aluminium.
Ah, I see what you're getting at. Like science, like aluminium, yeah, that makes sense. Although it's wrong. However, if you were, I'm going to try and give another hint, but try and not give this away. If you were a creature of the night, then yeah, you would probably have this phobia. Actually, if that makes any sense. And I said it's sort of to do with spices, although it's not really a spice. Well, I suppose it is a spice because it's food related.
Fear of garlic.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a vampire, this is not going to be much good, is it? Fear of, yeah. And then there's phobophobia. Phobophobia.
Fear of light.
Which I would hope somebody could guess.
Fear of fears.
Fear of the what? Moon, Phobos.
No, Phobo. Yeah. And then phobia. Should be quite easy to guess, yeah, though, with a thought in a way. But...
Phobia, so fear of being afraid.
Yeah. Fear of having a fear of having a phobia, that's correct. And then there's, oh, geez, I can't even say this. But, that's probably too difficult. Sesqui something, oh, no one's going to guess that. Fear of long words, whatever that was. Sesquipedalo.
I've heard this one before, but I don't ever remember it.
Abophobia.
Sorry, what's that?
Which one? The one?
The latest word.
The one just now? What? Sesquipedalo. Sesquipedalo. Yeah, phobia. Fear of long words. And then this next one was and then I've got ABLUTO phobia. What's that?
Ablutophobia.
I don't think anyone's going to guess that, to be
ablation
honest.
Is when things fall off. Fear of dropping limbs.
Fear of getting shot.
Ablation. Fall off. I guess in a way something would this, or this is a hint. Oh yeah.
Fear of your skin peeling off.
Fear of getting moles removed.
Fear of, I'm gonna say it's to do with water as well.
Oh yeah, ablution.
Something on a daily basis, actually, with water.
Fear of bathing.
So it's ablutophobia. Is that fear of drowning?
Fear of taking a shower. Hello? Hello?
No, he dropped off.
You joined HPR.
Fear of dropping off HPR.
Fear of dropping off HPR.
I think my laptop might be, well, was playing up slightly, or internet connection. Wait, am I still on at the minute? I'm going to come back, or try to come back. I've got a little laptop issue I want to try and solve, so just stay there, Rebel. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm going to try and see if I can sort this out, because there's a problem. Or am I stuck? Oh, wow. That's annoying. Well, I'm still here, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
It's playing up again. Can you hear me mostly normally?
Yes.
Right. Now, I got some weird issues with this laptop. And I think it's got sort of stuck again. But if I'm still on the stream, I guess it doesn't matter too much. Can't record it now, though. I can freeze and things. Don't click that. Leave it. Right, you can still hear me, yeah?
Yes, I can. Loud and clear.
Now I can't record the thing either. I was recording. But I guess the main thing is to still be on it, because otherwise it would be cause. And also my volume thing is stuck as well. Like, I was on push till, that's been happening for a little while now anyway, because I had the button down a lot. Which in a way means I should let this laptop battery die again, I think, or something. It's not repeating the menus. Yeah, I got this like Linux laptop that was it's been nice. And then, of course, there's been a few little hardware problems with it and stuff since I bought it. You still can hear me, yeah?
Yes, I can. Hey, according to the IT crowd, you should turn it off and on again.
I don't know if it's going to let me do that properly or not at the minute, because sometimes it doesn't even power off properly when it has problems. Or should I?
It looks like your push to talk button is stuck down.
If I drop off, I'll be back in about. If I don't come back soon now, I'll come back in about maybe 2 hours. Maybe I'm gonna try and turn it off, but there's a chance I can't come back straight away if I do that. Well, I guess I should try if it lets me. No, I think it's stuck. I think it's actually stuck. Oh well, I'll just it's having problems again. But you can hear me, yeah?
Yeah, but if you're stuck, you can never leave the HPR channel.
I can. Well, no, that's all right. I want it to stay anyway for now. I just got some weird. I get some weird laptop problems. At the moment, I'm pressing down my power button. Or I just tried, and it won't turn off at all. Again, I've had this before a few times now, and so I've just unplugged my charger. I'm on 100%. Last night it was annoying because I was on 34%, and I couldn't. I was having a good chat with whoever else was on it. You know, Ken's boy and the American woman and whoever else was on it, and I couldn't. It all just sort of froze up on me, and it was like, oh no. And then it was echoing with the sound as well, and I couldn't. And I powered off on the button, but then it's still on partly with the laminated keyboard and things. So I had to leave it for an hour or two, basically uncharged, whilst I had to break away from the computer. And now it's going to be even longer because I'm on 100% battery, but it will power, and then I can do things normally. So. So my push talk is going to be stuck for now, and if I can still be heard, I guess I can continue. So,
okay, now your push to talk just went off.
Right, I'm here, yeah.
Yes, you are. Crickets.
Is anyone still on?
I'm still on.
Hello, Verbal.
Hey, what's going on? Your mic was pretty low.
Is it still low?
Much better. So I wonder how long the recording is going to go for.
I think as long as the stream is running and people are talking.
I think they said they wanted to try to break their 19-hour record. I think it's amazing that Audacity can do the truncate silence. And so you don't have to do that automatically.
Yeah, the truncate silence is a pretty cool feature, I think.
Computers are for. Do all the boring stuff for you.
No, I am not. Guest, Jacek is asleep on the couch. Downstairs. This is upstairs. This is the master bedroom. No, it's the master bedroom. I sleep in that one over there. And then my office is the one over there.
I have what?
No, this used to be my bedroom. Then I moved into that bedroom over there. Sorry, I'm trying to...
have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.